Okay, welcome to episode 60 of Strike and Mike. What's up, Striker?
Hey, how you doing, everyone?
All right, so now we were supposed to have a guest, but I guess that was that ended up just being a troll. So we're just me and Striker today.
I'll have that guy on something else at a later date.
All right. So I guess he had wanted to talk about Zizek Peterson. I mean, I have not watched it, and I'll tell you why. Because I find Jordan Peterson to be so cringe. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, Zizek is cringe. I'm like, no, that guy is hilarious. I enjoy watching him, despite the...
He is funny.
Despite the slobbering, I still enjoy watching him. And Peterson just makes me cringe. His Canadian accent and his high-pitched voice, combined with his just retarded talking points, and the fact that, who is Jordan Peterson? His last book was 12 Rules for Life. He's a joke. He's a self-help guru.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the red pill of Jordan Peterson is the man has no ideology.
Yeah.
This is a great example of what Milo was trying to do and failed, which is a kind of a corporate branding of, quote, wrong think. So Jordan Peterson basically is a reaction to the fact that you can't observe and comment on reality anymore.
Right.
So if you go out there and you say, hey, the emperor's got a cock, that's not a woman. You know?
Right, right.
if you do that, like, so Jordan Peterson, essentially, Jordan Peterson is a harmless entity, just like Ben Shapiro. In fact, the Jew left outrage against these two figures only builds their brand.
Yes.
Is the one thing conservatives need to make money is to give off the impression that they're radical truth tellers under attack.
Exactly.
But actually not be that.
Right.
And that's the balance that they need to make money. I mean, Jordan Peterson, love him or hate him.
Or just find
Twitter
him irritating.
Yes.
This is what I do.
The Twitter echo chamber hates his guts, but you know what? The man sells out auditoriums.
Right, right.
At $100 a pop.
And
so – you know, this guy is popular with certain segments of society.
And this dynamic is what Sargon of Akkad, who has similar milquetoast opinions, at least publicly, to Peterson, what he is taking advantage of in the UK right now in getting the media all stirred up against him. I mean, we had Morgoth on TDS on Friday where we talked about this exact phenomena where basically the conservative thing, Donald Trump was sort of the pioneer in this area, where you go out and you trigger the shitlibs, and then you create the public conversation to be you versus a bunch of insane shitlibs. You make them look as crazy as they are, and you just reel in the normies, you know. And Sargon is doing that. This whole rape tweet thing. It's like he made a joke 4 years ago.
Right.
And it was a funny joke. It was like, who cares? But it's also like, who cares? And that's the normal person's response. And so they break his balls about it in a press conference. And he's like, well, who cares? And then they all go insane because their ideology says you have to care about rape jokes, which, you know, no normal, you know, ordinary white person, ordinary white guy gives a shit. And then he's just reeling in supporters based on that, and then he doesn't really have to be that substantive.
No ordinary Muslim cares either.
No, they don't give a shit either. No, they not only do they not care, they're like we need more of this, please. But yeah, no, I mean, look, if Sargon can't make a joke, well, look at half of the fucking vulgar comedians that take the stage in both London and New York and wherever that do all kinds of raunchy jokes. I mean, and his joke, the problem with his joke is a personal insult directed at a particular woman for being ugly. I mean, the implication here isn't even rape. The implication is he called a woman ugly, right? He said, I wouldn't even rape her, meaning she's ugly. So that's what it really was. That's what all these broads are really complaining about.
Only second to calling them fat. You can call a woman a slut.
Yeah.
You can call a woman a bitch. Don't call her fat
or ugly. Yeah, he's like, this woman's just ugly. And therefore, the implication being that even though she's an MP, she's still a low-status woman because what gives women status is their looks. This is what they don't want to hear. But anyway, the point being that Sargon is – this strategy is a thing that we have to watch out for. And you know, Ben Shapiro does it. Jordan Peterson doesn't even – Sargon is doing it. And I actually kind of like Sargon. Like unlike Peterson and Shapiro, I kind of like them. But
Ben Shapiro just spent $300,000 promoting his Facebook page. So he's paying for ads on Facebook. Six figures, $300,000.
Oh God, is he interfering in elections?
Charlie Kirk is doing the same thing. $100,000 for Charlie Kirk. So they're trying to make these guys catch because they don't have actual grassroots support. So no. they have to bombard you with Ben Shapiro.
Thing with Charlie Kirk is even worse because he doesn't say anything controversial. He doesn't even do that bit. No. Like, he's just a fucking cuck. And the thing is, I remember when he did. We did a bit on TDS a few weeks ago where we were showing some video of him and Candace Owens and Dave Rubin at this thing called Campus Clash. And these kids, these students, you know, you can just go. You don't have to be a student at this school. The idea is just to go if you're in college and you get to ask people questions. And they say they're willing to take challenging questions. Of course, the leftists don't even bother, right? Because they don't even bother to show up and give them. The only people that show up and give them tough questions are, like, you know, people to their right. And so, they don't like that very much. But the thing is, like, Kirk himself was getting wrecked by these people, but then Dave Rubin steps in and he's actually pretty slippery. So despite the fact that, you know, he's unimpressive, he doesn't really have, like Peterson doesn't really have an ideology. He's just there as, like, posing as the average ordinary guy. But of course, he's actually a Jewish homosexual. He's not ordinary at all.
He used to be on the Young Turks.
And, and now he's doing this stuff. And, so they, you know, they are, you know, he was able to kind of come back at some of these questioners coming at it from the right and, you know, catch them off guard and hit them with arguments that left them thunderstruck and stuff. But, Kirk doesn't have the ability to do that. He's just a moron.
Yeah.
It's really pathetic, actually. He needs Dave Rubin there to bail him out. Of course, Candace Owens is similarly moronic, but she's, like, sassy. So her response is always...
Candace Owens isn't moronic. She's just unscrupulous. She's actually a lot... I think she's smarter than Kirk.
She might be. But her response at this... She's not good at argumentation. Like, she's not...
No.
She's not good in a tit-for-tat situation. So her response in this is always just being the sassy black girl. Like, she actually kind of reverted to that role where she was just, like, sassing these guys rather than actually answering questions. I think she's smart in her like, we used to say this on TDS all the time. Look, if you're a black person with no morals, which is okay, you know, whatever you want, no comment, right? But if you're a black person with, like, no, not necessarily morals, but no scruples, like you're willing to lie for money, just be a conservative.
Yes,
just be a conservative. You'll rake in the dollars. And maybe she was listening to that episode, and she decided to do it because we were saying, like, this is what we were saying. We're like, look, these people are so desperate. Like, the worship of Thomas Sowell has gotten out of control. Like, they need somebody new.
Yeah. You need someone under 70.
And there's going to be somebody. Because, look, blacks are, you know, they're not the smartest group of people, but they're not. There's some of them that are, you know, a little bit canny, and they can step in to fill that role.
Yeah. I mean, the guy they have representing the NRA on Fox News is, like, literally a black guy with a flat bill cap.
Oh boy, and you should see boomers. You should see boomers, man. J.O. was telling me one time he went to an NRA show, or he went to a rifle show. It wasn't an NRA show. He went to a rifle show someplace, and you know, they would have these, you know, YouTube removed the gun videos, but there used to be gun YouTubers, guys that were like gun guys that would do, like, oh, I got this and that. And they would do video. They would get popular. They had hundreds of thousands of subs and stuff.
FPS Russia is one of them.
Yeah. So they would have, I think they removed all those accounts. I don't think they allow that anymore.
Interesting.
After one or another shooting. I don't remember. Maybe I don't remember which one. Certainly wasn't Newton, because that was a while ago, but it was after some shooting. They decided, okay, that's enough. Maybe it was Vegas. I think it might have been Vegas that prompted it, where they removed that stuff. Because, of course, that's the best answer, right? But anyway, so they would have these celebrities, and people would go and mob them and get signatures. And then he saw, like, he'd be like, oh, who's that? And like, oh, that's old Butch. You know, Butch's firearms, whatever, the guy who was, like, the guest, and, like, they'd be wanting his signature and stuff. And they'd be mobbed at another place. He'd be like, who's that? He's like, oh, that's just a black guy. So, like, these boomers... They just, one black guy shows up and like, thank you. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. And it's, I just, mean, it's just, whatever. It is what it is. But, you know,
it's just kind
it
of
is,
funny.
It is tokenization. Yeah.
It's like they, brutal they tokenize. Yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, though, we say that about the conservatives, but the Judeo left actually does the same thing. I mean,
well, who did they learn it from?
Blacks. Yes. The Blacks for Bernie thing is totally tokenized as well.
Oh, yeah. And so, I mean, and Kirk does the bit of no identity politics. And then, you know, yeah. TPUSA has black. They're doing the Blexit. And then they were doing, then they're trying to meme like Jexit, which is just like the most cringe thing ever. Because like, why on earth would Jews do Jexit? They have control of both parties. Why would they exit one?
Why would
it doesn't make any sense. That would be a good question to ask Candace Owens.
They don't have. It's not just that they have control over both parties. They run the government, and that doesn't matter what party wins or what president.
Right, exactly.
I mean, look at Donald Trump, the orange Jimmy Carter. I mean, he's been neutered. I was reading the Mueller report yesterday, and just as I thought. Donald Trump Jr. was the next one on the list for an arrest. They wanted to, they were considering charging him. So Donald Trump Jr. was the Mueller report says that he was suspected of quote helping to hack some password or some bullshit.
Wait, are you serious? That's what they were trying to say about Julian Assange.
Yes, they wanted to bring
Does anybody believe in their right mind that Donald Trump Jr. is some kind of elite hacksaw?
Yeah, well, so
he knows how to hack. This guy's a moron.
The basic conclusion of the Mueller report is that Donald Trump Jr. could have been put up on federal hacking charges, but they didn't do it. And their rationale for not bringing him up was that he's too dumb to hack someone. And,
that's my immediate response.
He didn't know what he was doing. That was their rationale. But you better believe that if Trump would have pushed against the status quo, they would have brought
him up. I mean, I saw that Jay Left on Twitter going crazy, making fun of Trump for that, making fun of Trump Jr. for that.
Yeah.
And I thought that might have just been one of their memes. Like something that it was like a consolation meme out of the Mueller report, but
it is in there.
I'm sure it's true, but I'm sure also like, you know, Mueller put stuff like that in there. I mean, he's giving them, you know, I mean, it's probably true that he is too dumb to hack something, but then the question, I mean, look, I don't want to get into the nuts and bolts of this, but I mean, look, the higher level of that is that this was an operation to sandbag Trump's administration and it worked. I mean,
right.
You know, I don't know. I mean, looking at that any other way, it's like, you know,
yes, it was a coup, but because we live in America, you know, he didn't fight it. So it is what it is.
I mean,
he's going to go down in history as the orange Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, and he fought it to some degree, but he didn't. He never. Problem is that Trump never realized that the best way to fight these people is to go hard and go strong with what it is that they don't want. You know, like make, because then they have to fight on more than one front. If you give up your agenda and then just fight the probe, which is what they wanted, then you're losing. If you continue pushing with your agenda and fight the probe at the same time, they've got to fight on multiple fronts. They're weaker.
What's that Emerson quote? If you strike at a king, you better kill him.
Yeah.
I think that's how it goes. Like, you know, if you're going to challenge the power structure, you got to go. You got to be willing to go all the way.
Yeah.
If you find yourself in the White House, in the executive office, you have to use every single ability and whatever you have at your disposal. And, yeah, risk going to jail or even being killed by the CIA. So, lesson learned. I don't want to get into whether I think Trump is real or whatever. Who cares? At this point, it doesn't even matter. But, anyway, I want to talk a little bit about the New Mexico militia guy.
Okay, yeah.
So they released the federal indictment on Pacer. So, because, you know, what I was saying is, you know, when they arrested him, it was totally political, right?
Of course,
So, you know, I had some pedantic faggot on my Twitter saying, no. He was a felon in possession of a firearm.
Who cares?
And yes, but this man, okay, so here's the thing. Like, where did they get the probable cause to do a background check on him?
Yeah.
And I found where they got it. They had to reach back all the way to October 2017, where the FBI claims they got a tip, an anonymous tip from someone, from a quote witness, that he was planning to assassinate George Soros and members of Antifa.
Yeah, that sounds totally plausible.
This is from October 2017, which begs a question, like, why, if this is true.
Also, think about what was going on at that time period.
Yes. It's
like the height of Charlottesville hysteria.
Right. So if this is true, why didn't they arrest the man then? Right. Why didn't they investigate him then? Right. So here's the worst part. Here's where the boomer factor comes in. Look at this man. This moron, this guy, Hopkins, this moron, fucking saw the FBI showed up at his house after the Jew media made a big stink about him essentially enforcing American immigration law. He wasn't, by the way, he wasn't kidnapping illegal aliens.
Well, I want to be clear about something else with this. Now, I don't know what else he did that was stupid, but these guys, when they did this, now they did have sidearms. Okay, so they had guns like on their hips. Now, most of them, I'm assuming they were permitted legal permits because no one else is getting in trouble for this. And they had trucks with like floodlights on them, right?
Yes.
And that's what they used. They did not like point guns at these migrants. I want to make that clear because I think that the image that people have in their mind of what they did is that they like ambushed these people with guns pointed and rounded them up the way you see in like the movies, like stormtroopers in Star Wars with their laser beams, like pointing them and like, you know, frog marching them somewhere. They didn't do that. If they had done that, they would have been in a shit ton of trouble because pointing guns at people is illegal. Okay. Yes. You cannot just brandish guns at people and threaten them. And,
all they did was, what
they malicious. Yelled at these people to sit down and they called the Border Patrol.
They gave them water, they held them, and they called the Border Patrol.
That's all that they did. They basically are like a neighborhood watch.
Exactly. And the Jew media decided to...
Well, they don't want people doing this.
...propaganda campaign against them. Mm-hmm. And this is happening all the fucking time now. Some fucking communist blogger will write some bullshit about you, and then fucking a week later, you got the FBI arresting you. Yep. What the fuck is that all about? That's not legitimate. So, no. But here's where he fucked up particularly though. So the FBI shows up at his house. Their probable cause was something from the year 2017. So they show up at his house and they're like, hey, this is just sort of like a background they give. It wasn't really probable cause. So they go to his door and there's a guy, Special Agent Fancher, asked if there were any firearms in the house. Hopkins stated there was a shotgun and a handgun in the bedroom, as well as another handgun in the kitchen.
I would have said, where's your warrant?
Okay, but there's more to it.
Yeah.
So he said, his story to the FBI, first of all, you should never talk to them. His story was that the firearms belonged to his wife. They're not his. So anyway, let me go down. Here's where you're really going to flinch. Hopkins and Murphy is his wife, were presented with an FD-26 consent to search form. S.A. Fincher, Special Agent Fancher, read the form to Hopkins and Murphy, explaining that their consent to search their residence is voluntary and they could refuse consent. Both Hopkins and Murphy instead signed the FD-26 form, giving Special Agent Foucher and Waldron voluntary consent to search their residence. So this is...
It's going to hurt them in court, too.
Take this.
Takes a whole lot of legal arguments off the table when you do that.
Take this and do the exact opposite.
Do the opposite, please. And look, I don't want to spook anybody, but look, FBI is a political enforcement agency at this point. We saw that video of that guy from 8chan, which is now down. I saw a video of a guy from 8chan who, I guess, some agents showed up at his house. I don't know what it was about or who he was or anything, but he had the video. He had the phone pointed at his feet the whole time, but there was 2 points in it in which he was able to get the faces of the FBI agents, one of which looked like a shitlib woman. He was actually smart, though. He didn't tell them anything. He handled it very well, but, you know, the video's disappeared by now. But, you gotta just, I mean, because the thing is, this was just some 8chan shit poster. So, like, I don't want to spook anybody, but it's like, they are now considering themselves political enforcers. And because everything else has failed, they cannot, they're having a look. Let's not count ourselves out. We have had a profound effect on the narrative and the way these people talk about things. We're going to go into a little bit more of that later. But knowing that they're having such a difficult time, even with the censorship, even with the heavy handed tactics on the internet, they still are having a hard time controlling it. So, you know, it's not, I don't think it's going to happen necessarily to just anybody, but they are showing up at people's homes because of things they post on the internet. And you can post whatever the fuck you want on the internet. And they can't do shit to you. So your first reaction should be, I don't want to talk to you. I want a lawyer. Please go away. And that's all
don't
you should
talk
ever
to
say.
I mean, sent me that video.
I wouldn't go as far as say just don't talk to them at all. What I would say is, I don't want to talk to you without an attorney.
Yeah.
I need my attorney if I'm going
to
talk.
Usually, I mean, that guy played it okay. I mean, I got this video. Let me give some background on this. I got this video. Someone that posts on 4chan sent it to me on Twitter in a message. And they were saying, like, hey, check this out. This guy had the FBI come to his home and, you know, basically hunted him down and demanded to meet him. So this guy was saying that the FBI first called him on the phone and said, hey, are you so-and-so? Oh, okay, because we need to meet. And he actually said, no, I don't want to meet you. Am I in trouble? Am I under arrest? Am I whatever? And the FBI agent said, no. And so he said, so then why do I have to meet you? And he's like, because I have to meet you. And they're very persistent. So he met them in a location. They were threatening to come to his job to embarrass
him. Yeah, I've heard of them do that before as well, where they say, don't make us. I've heard of them doing this to people where they'll leave a note on their door where they say, don't make us show up at your work. Because, of course, that'll get your job all freaked out. So that's an that's pure just intimidation tactics.
Yeah, that's like a Stasi tactic. Yeah. But anyway, so they met with the guy and they're saying, I know you're a patriot. First of all, the first weird thing was that they were dressed like, they were dressed like mom and dad. Like they weren't dressed in black suits or anything. They were dressed like average, you know, people you see somewhere. Mom jeans, Mike Enoch shirt.
Yeah, tablecloth. Tablecloth shirt. Yeah.
Tablecloth shirt. And then the woman was dressed like some.
She was dressed like a shitlib.
Like a liberal woman. Yeah. So they're coming saying, hi, very polite. And they're like, hi there. Oh, pleasure to meet you. Oh, yeah. I heard you're so smart.
I wish I downloaded the video when you first sent it to me. Now it's down. Yeah. Whatever.
So anyway, they're saying, listen, I know you're a patriotic guy and you're very pro-America.
Blah, blah.
And so we need you. And by the way, this isn't about your First Amendment right.
They started floating the offer of like a job at that, which is total bullshit. And he knew it was total bullshit.
You're never going to get a job with them, period.
I know. But this guy wasn't
as an informant.
Yeah, but they started offering, well, you're like really good with computers. Like we could use people like you at the agency. And it's like, guy was like, yeah, all right, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. They were basically what they were doing there, in my opinion, is they were feeling him out to see if they could make him an informant.
Yeah.
He would call him up. He'd be like, hey, you guys remember that job you offered me? Can I try out for it? They're assuming he was going to do that.
Yep.
And then they would say, oh, well, we don't have that position available, but here, do this kind of internship. This is where you sit on a 4chan or a poll and you collect as much information as possible on these people, and then you send it to us, and then we'll pay you. Think of it as an internship. That's the kind of shit they do. And, you know, the extent of their incursion is a mystery. I don't fucking know if this stupid shit actually works on someone. But long
Dude,
story
short. I wouldn't be surprised.
Sure, but long story short, the story here is the fact that he was filming them. And they got really uncomfortable.
They didn't like it at all.
They got really.
Well, he kept asking them if he wasn't allowed to, and they wouldn't answer that question. They just said, "We just really don't want you to," which that means he is allowed to. And exactly. And if I were him, I would have put that right. I would put the phone right in their face.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, "Can you put that down, please?" But they never said you have to. They just said, "Please, please." And then. They didn't want him taking pictures of their badges either.
I kind of understand that.
That's fine, but their faces is another thing. I mean, people have a right to know who these people are. I don't think that they have a right. I don't think the FBI.
They're police.
Yeah.
So
I don't believe that the FBI has a right to some kind of. You know, obviously, if you're looking talking about badges, you could deal with the issue of forgeries and things like that, which, you know, whatever. But, like, we don't need to get deep into it. But people have a right to know this person works for the FBI. This person is not just a civilian. There's no reason why you don't have a right to know that. There's no law that says you don't have a right to know that. They are not. There's nothing special about these people that makes it so that you – I mean, cops, people know that they're cops when they're off duty. If you know who they are, you see them. You see their faces. You know, cops don't actually stop you from taking pictures of them anymore. They don't. They even say you have every right to film, and they don't care if you film their
faces. Feds get more antsy about it than
of course, you know, because they need to pretend cops. In some cases that they're not cops.
Yeah,
but that's not my problem.
That's not anyone's problem. Don't be an FBI agent.
Yeah, if you're worried about that, then go into another line of work.
Yeah,
it's not my problem, and that's what I would keep saying to them. I mean, she kept saying it's for my safety. I'd be like, well, that frankly, ma'am, that's not my problem. Okay,
it's not a safety thing. I don't think they think some 20-year-old Spurg is an actual threat. What they're afraid of is stuff like that getting out to the public and saying, "Hey, holy shit, we live in a fucking police state."
Yes. Exactly. And the one guy was dressed like a boomer and the girl was dressed like a liberal woman. So like these people don't advertise who they are at all. Like they don't, you would think an FBI agent shows up at your door. You see some guy in a neat black suit. No. With sunglasses. It's not like that.
Actually a slob.
He's actually going to be an overweight guy dressed like a fucking middle class, you know, boomer on the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a boomer going out fishing or something like that.
It's a 40-year-old man in cargo shorts.
Yeah, no, literally. Like every time, and I've seen some videos that some pro-Palestine people have put out there, and it's the same shit. Like I remember there's this one woman who was doing pro-Palestine protests, and they showed up at her door. Now, of course, liberals, because this woman was liberal, she had, I hate to say it, everybody, but this is something we have to understand. She had the better instincts. So her instinct was immediately film them. Don't take any of their orders. No. And the other thing is liberals on some level, at least that kind of, or I should say a leftist, right? That kind of a leftist has a moral confidence in their views that I think sometimes right wingers lack, even though there's no reason that we shouldn't have it. So she would be willing to be arrested by the FBI and she would call a lawyer and she'd make a huge fucking stink about it.
Right.
Which is something. Now, I understand that they leftists get more leeway in these situations. I do understand that, which is one of the reasons that we're afraid is because we don't get the kind of leeway that a leftist get, even a pro-Palestine leftist. Like, we are still considered much worse than them.
I disagree.
I understand you disagree with that.
No. I'll tell you why. I actually have I have the documents. So I've actually been researching case precedent for a variety of reasons on these things.
Well, it's good to just know this stuff.
Yeah. So I was looking at some of the anarchist activity from 1999 to 2010. there are many cases where the FBI were entrapping, because that was during a time when anarchists were actually like fighting.
They're actually going after capitalism. Yeah.
So like there was one where a guy was arrested on conspiracy to commit a terrorist act because he said something about some logging company that was opening up in his little hippie commune or whatever. And they genuinely got set up. They were entrapped by the FBI. They were using the same tactics they're trying to use against nationalists now. Another one was a guy, like five anarchists went out and they started breaking. I think they broke all the windows in a McDonald's on a May Day rally.
Well, it's actually illegal. I mean,
it is illegal. But get this, the fucking, because it was at a political rally. This was in Minnesota. And because it was at a political rally, the DA charged them with conspiracy to riot in the furtherance of terrorism. So some of these precedents have been set with anarchists. And the way they were able to fight back against this is, one, sure, they're more confident in their morals and so on. But two, they had back then the networks were very strong, mm-hmm. and they just got the word out. You know, they had people rallying for their freedom and putting the word out and so on. And believe it or not, the mainstream media was not so receptive to their message back then, because they were actually challenging people with money and power. Right. Now they don't do that. I think part of the reason they don't do that anymore is actually – I think leftists have been blackpilled from the state repression, because they went through a wave of very vicious repression in the early 2000s.
And they realized that, hey, here's stuff we can do that feels militant, but really isn't. It's in the furtherance of money and power. So we all of a sudden, the cops are on our side, and we're talking about how the FBI's motion to dismiss was fire and like, what the fuck is that? Also, you know, this is when the intersection out, then when they don't focus on capitalism, when they focus on intersectionality and post-colonial theory and attacking white people and going after working class anti-immigration protesters and things like that. Wow. Not only are they not being oppressed, they're being uplifted. They feel like, you know, they've got – the world is their oyster. You know, they go out there
– ticker tape parade.
They go out there and they make violent threats online and nothing happens. They can literally sick the FBI on people now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and a lot of these people that are doing this, like the Gorzenskys and the people like that, they were never involved in any of the anti-capitalist stuff. They only got involved for their own weird, you know – identity politics, intersectionality reasons.
Or for attention.
Well, attention too. It all boils down to that. But also the feeling of power. I mean, people love the feel. I mean, you can't tell me that Emily, that Eddie Gorzenski doesn't get off on the feeling of being able to, like, put right wingers in jail or get them arrested and shit. Like, it's practically what this person lives for, is that rush of power.
Rod Dreher actually wrote an article where he mentioned this Gorzenski character. It was a recent article where he was talking about privatized surveillance.
Yeah.
And he quoted Gorzenski saying that, you know, Gorzenski was saying that they were working on some kind of program so that they can spy on you without warrants or whatever. And Rod Dreher was talking about this and calling it soft tyranny.
Well, look at it like
but
this.
But there's nothing soft about that.
There's nothing soft, but also think of this.
People do that. The FBI loves Antifa because they're able to skirt the Fourth Amendment.
Exactly. And think about this. So these militia people are going now. The guy was drug-brained in signing this consent form, whatever. But fundamentally, they didn't do anything wrong. They are a bunch of guys walking along the border. They encountered a bunch of migrants illegally crossing the border. They stopped them. They told them, sit here. We're calling Border Patrol. And the migrants, for whatever reason, they were scared or whatever happened, they did it. They followed their orders. They sat down and they waited. It's essentially like if somebody grabs some lady's purse and you grab their arm and you, like, sit there while I call the cops.
Yep.
And they do it because, like, you know, you're a big guy or whatever. And that's essentially what happened here. So they can't come up with a crime. It's funny because all these shitlips are trying to get them on the crime of doing this. But there's people saying, oh, they're going to get in trouble for impersonating a government employee or impersonating a federal officer or something like that. It's like, all right, now that is a crime to say that. But what about Gorzenski and her crew basically saying, here, we're going to create a way to provide the government with open source intelligence so that they can violate the Fourth Amendment rights of their subjects by taking our stuff that we get through Fourth Amendment violative means and give it to them. And then they can say it's open source. This is what happened to RAM.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what happened to RAM. Except the problem was, even with their Fourth Amendment violated, there's still no law breaking that they did.
Exactly.
They still didn't break any laws, so they had to come up with this absurd theory of rioting and conspiracy, which is bogus.
The motion to dismiss yesterday for RAM, the FBI prosecutor spent most of his argument talking about their political beliefs.
Right. And
so that just tells you what this is all about.
And there's a motion now to disallow that, because if that's all they're going to do, it's like, if you got to present a case, if you're not going to present the fucking case, because there's also they did put the argument forth. I've talked about this motion to dismiss before. There's four major elements of it. I can't remember what they all are now because I haven't prepped on it. But I know there was one major one, which is that, OK, they did say the thing. Well, one was that the thing was overly broad. That it was unconstitutional, it was being used in an unconstitutional way, and that even given all of that, they still failed to state a basic claim, because even in their indictment, there's still no allegation of any actual action that breaks the law. So I've talked about this concept before, the concept of repeating a statute by rote and simply saying somebody did this versus including an action that they did. So it's sort of like saying, it's like accusing you of the statute without giving any specifics. Like, if you don't give any specifics at all, then you're just literally repeating the language of the law back. Like, so he's like, on this date, the people at RAM violated this statute by the language of the law reading back, right? So they didn't say they went and they fought these people. They went and they punched this guy. They went and they yelled these threats. They don't, there's nothing like that. It's like they went and they yelled a threat which constitutes incitement to riot. They said, no, they just incited a riot. Well, how? What did they do to do that? Well, we're not saying that. Right? So
actually, the prosecutor's argument in that regard was that they found a text message from one of the guys that said, smash commies.
Okay, so at least they've got one. I mean,
the smash commies thing was not in the context of Charlottesville. It was something that they said randomly as a slogan.
Right.
Which is protected speech. It's not incitement to violence. Because if it is, what do you make a fucking punch?
If it is, then every single person that says punch Nazis is liable as well.
Yes,
so if you say smash commies, they were saying it on Twitter. They were saying it on Twitter as a rally cry. And they were trying to, RAM was saying the smash commies thing on Twitter. And I remember, when I saw the legal stuff about the civil lawsuit about Charlottesville, they were using slogans like, we're going to go and fight back, to mean that they were going to go and like fist fight. What about resist with Donald Trump?
Right?
So much of this language carries so much of political language carries this idea of confrontation with a foe, right? With an enemy.
Yes.
We're going to confront, we're going to fight the enemy. We're going to hit them. We even say we're going to meet them on this battlefield. If they took our previous conversation where I say we have to meet them on this battlefield and not that one, and they pretend like I'm talking about actual battlefields and not like metaphorical political battlefields, and they could put me up on some kind of conspiracy. It's bullshit. Everybody knows that political language includes violent metaphors. It has to, because we could go into political theory and talk about how it's violence by another means, blah, 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 whatever you want to do. But what I'm saying is politics is confrontation. Confrontational language includes things like smash commies, punch Nazis, whatever. If you want to go with that.
What they're doing is disingenuous. It's not even worth it.
We don't even have to explain it because everybody knows. Yeah.
Everyone knows, including the prosecutor and the DA.
Oh, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's a fucking sociopath that is just using stupid shit because he doesn't. And the funny thing is, these prosecutors and these DAs, they don't give a fuck about white supremacy. They're just trying to get a fucking raise, trying to get career advancement. They know whose ass to kiss.
They want to get like paid speeches from the ADL and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Like Thomas Cohen, who is the one who's like the kind of the guy leading all this, the DA from the Western District of Virginia, who's the one that's kind of all these U.S. attorneys are working under him. he just wants his balls fanned by the ADL and such, and he fans their balls, and he's right. basically saying, look, Jews, I'm a good candidate for promotion. Maybe I'll be the next Virginia State Attorney General. Maybe I can yep. be governor. Maybe I can be senator. I'll be a good lackey for you, you know, for you, you know, for as long as you need. I'm your guy, Jews. That's what he's doing. He doesn't give a fuck about, oh, whites. He knows that Ram is not a you know, he knows that they're not criminals. He doesn't give a fuck. He's willing to throw these young men in jail in the furtherance of his own career.
The same is true for the guys that are the FBI agents that went after this militia guy. They know the guy isn't a threat. They know he's not trying political. To assassinate anyone.
Yes.
They, if they are simply doing this for
career. If they thought he was
reasons.
A real threat, why did they just show up at his house? Why didn't they have, I mean, because they showed up at his house with a form asking him to voluntarily sign. If they thought he was going to voluntarily sign a search warrant, what made them think he was a threat? Does a real terrorist do that? No. If they really thought he was a terrorist, they would have gone in there like it was Waco.
They brought in, what they were doing is they took advantage of this elderly man's trust and naivete.
Yes.
Trust in the government. That as long as you obey the law, the Constitution will protect you. I mean, that's his whole thing.
Yeah.
And look how it worked out. So the FBI probably knew this. That's why in the video we saw, the FBI goes up to him. He's like, I know you're a proud and patriotic American.
Yeah, oh, they always say
you
that.
Know, for a guy in his 20s, like, we laugh at that because we know you're running an angle.
Yeah.
But a guy who's in his 70s, like,
yeah,
this
he's
guy,
gonna, that's going to work. And I've seen that angle before, I'll be honest. I've seen text messages sent to people where a similar angle is played, and you know, when they're trying to cultivate an informant, and it's just like, and people just laugh at it. I mean, maybe we're giving away too much. Maybe we should want them to continue to say this, because as soon as they say it, you know they're full of shit.
Yes, it doesn't work. That only works on older conservatives. Yeah. It doesn't work on young people who realize that the FBI is a corrupt and discredited institution.
Yeah, and then it's a political
institution.
This
man assumed that if he signed the warrant, he's like, oh, I got nothing to hide.
Right.
Well, that's a very bad idea. Never, ever talk to the feds. Never consent to anything. Always ask for a lawyer. Always ask, hey, am I detained? Am I under
investigation? I would just say, the first thing I would do in any kind of thing like this, and it probably won't happen to you, I'm just saying it has happened to people that have done legitimately nothing other than post on the internet. So if that does happen to you, and the off chance it does, just ask for a lawyer. All you do. And that way that will completely stifle them, say, like, look, I'm afraid to say anything to you guys. I want to talk to a lawyer. That's it.
Don't even say you're afraid to say anything. Just say, I want to talk to a lawyer.
Yeah. I want to talk to a lawyer. No, you can't come in. I want to talk to a lawyer.
I want to use my right to a lawyer.
Yeah.
And that's it. And another thing,
that'll make
too,
him go away. That will make him go
another,
away.
Another thing, you know, I was a little put off by that because I was like, wait a second. So he's not in trouble. He didn't do anything. He's on an anonymous image board, which, you know, not for nothing. But that one, I was scrolling just out of curiosity to see the other day on 8chan to look for more info on this case. And, a lot of the posts there smell kind of Fed-like.
Oh, yeah. So no, there's no question that there's
obviously
various actors.
Performance and so on there, and it's obviously under surveillance. The point I'm saying, though, is that
there's definitely people.
Like, you have a right to be there. First of all, you have a right to post on 8chan or Gab or whatever you fuck you want. And two, I looked up what the legal parameters are in tracing someone's IP address, right? Because if think of it this way, right? If you're not doing anything wrong, you'd assume that you'd need a subpoena,
right,
to get a warrant to get someone, an anonymous person's IP
yeah,
address.
Yeah, because where so do you get it from? You need to get it from the ISP. Are they just handing it over to the FBI? They're not supposed to do that.
They're not supposed to do that. And here's another thing.
Yeah.
I looked at the case precedent on this. And apparently, like 2 years ago, and this is how they always do it, right? So apparently 2 years ago, there was a guy that was manufacturing child pornography on the internet, right? Horrible fucking thing. The FBI was able to track him without a warrant, and they tracked his IP without a warrant, So they had circumstantial evidence, but it wasn't enough to get an actual warrant to get. But hold on a second.
Okay, yeah.
So this guy challenged that in court to try and – I think they found the child pornography after they tracked him. But anyway, this guy challenged it in court, and like everything – this is why I never get too eager about anti-Muslim stuff either, because if it was up to me and I had power, guess what I would do to pedophiles? Yeah. Redacted from a tree.
Yeah.
Okay. Redacted from a tree. That's what I would do personally to pedophiles.
Fairly normal sentiment, by the way. Like, you know.
Right. But see, that's the sentiment they manipulate. They set the case precedent in cases like this, but then they later use those precedents to go after legitimate political dissidents. And that's the same thing with Muslim stuff. Like when they passed the Patriot Act.
Did this child pornographer successfully challenge this warrant, this lack of warrant?
No, he lost. It got struck down. And I think what obviously played a big difference is that the judge said, wait, you're a fucking pedo fag.
Yeah.
You should go to hell. That's probably what it was.
Yeah.
But the problem is that sets precedent. So now the FBI, believe it or not, can trace your IP address without a warrant.
Yeah. And I also feel like
come fuck with you at your house and terrorize your family.
I feel like this is a setup because that case, I feel like they probably could have gotten a warrant and they chose not to create this precedent on purpose. Like basically that pedophile he played his role, and because he's a pedophile, you don't want to let him go on a technicality like that, or what seems like a technicality. The judge says to hell with it. You're a fucking manufacturing child porn. No, fuck your motion, right? Which I understand that.
I get it. Yeah.
But like the problem is then when you set that precedent, then that's going to hurt political distance. Now, white nationalists. Now, if you have a Jewish judge, they're going to be more likely to do that for a white nationalist than they would be for a pedophile.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a judge that's afraid of Jews, that's the other thing. You could have a Gentile judge that's afraid of Jews.
Yes.
And he's like, well, this guy is a white nationalist. I can't be fair to him. And the thing is, I've also looked back in history at cases involving white nationalists, KKK, neo-Nazi, whatever. They actually got fair treatment from the courts in the 80s sometimes.
Greensboro. And the Greensboro Massacre.
Yeah, well, they won that, but then
they won twice. So the state brought them up on murder charges. They got acquitted, and then the FBI came in to try and get them anyway with other crimes.
And they got acquitted because the jury was sympathetic to them in the 70s. But then there's other cases where in smaller cases than that where not just like just on smaller things like they just were treated fairly by judges. They were treated objectively and fairly, and that's out the window now. Even in some cases, actual particular judges, who I don't need to get into it now, but actual particular judges were fair years ago and have stopped being fair in the meantime. So, I've seen this by looking back through past cases, and it's quite remarkable, actually.
Now, don't take this as a total black pill, fatalistic type of thing. No, like, you still can win in court.
You have to fight anyway.
Three or four times as hard.
Yeah, and you have to fight anyway. And this is what I always say. Like, I've seen people that have been, you know, kind of Eeyore on this. Like, LOL, implying we could ever win in court. Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay? You have to fight because one, you have to stand up for your rights, and the more you do it and the more people do it, the harder it is for them to keep suppressing it again and again, right? Because Jews, when they first started taking over the legal system, they didn't win all the time either.
Right.
They just persevered. So, like, the thing is, if we continue to make noise, if we continue to tell FBI agents, no, we are not doing anything wrong. You are purely political police.
And continue to film them.
Imagine ask for attorneys and then fight back on everything.
Everyone that gets a visit from them films them.
Yeah.
And you collect that in an archive. You could possibly get hundreds of videos of the FBI going to harass law-abiding citizens.
And everybody should see it.
Exactly.
Everybody has – don't just put it in an archive. Put it out on the internet.
Yes.
I mean, it might get taken down eventually, but put it out there. Make make it known that this is happening. This is the thing. We have to, because everything that leftists did before they were totally in control of the narrative, we have to do that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that includes when you've got an opening, you've got to go to court, you've got to fight, you've got to just not roll over for these people. And you've got to stop. The one thing the leftists had, and look, I'm not totally blaming us, because when you face repression and you're not expecting it, people get scared and they panic, and that has happened to us. So, but we just got to get over it and understand that we are morally in the right. Okay, we are morally correct in our views. There's nothing wrong with our views. We got to stop feeling that kind of shame. And if you think there's something wrong with it, well, maybe you should stop, you know, saying
dumb shit. Should quit. If you feel guilty about this stuff, you shouldn't be doing this.
Right. If you don't feel morally correct in doing this, then don't do it. And if you go out there and you say stuff that you maybe you don't, and look, I've done it before too, but whatever, old posts are old posts. Just don't do those kind of posts anymore. But the point is, we can fight all of this stuff. That's my message. We can fight, and we have to fight.
You can win. It's just harder, but you can win.
And you can win. Oftentimes, leftists do this thing where they win moral victories, even if they don't win the court victory. We got to start thinking like that too.
There was a case like that I saw during that period of repression that leftists were suffering, where it was 8 people. These individuals, they were charged with I have to look it up, but anyway, it was like 8 people, and they brought them up on these ridiculous terrorism charges or whatever for something that is nothing of the sort. And they actually dropped the charges because the DA was afraid that these people would use it as a political bullhorn.
Yeah,
that they would politicize their trial and make them look like shit. So they pled them down to misdemeanors and let them go. So keep that in mind. Like, you know, the only thing we're saying here, we're not saying that these cases can't be won. What we're saying is you have to fight them differently.
I'll also I don't know how many people ever read the kind of filings and pleadings I made when I was in that civil suit. But I should make some more of those. I should make those more available, because I weighed those filings down with all kinds of political rhetoric. Okay. Like I was continually asserting in every filing. Because you get to write a little intro, and then you write your arguments, and then you have your conclusions. That's how you structure these things.
Yes.
But I was just throughout, I was peppering it with all kinds of references to the fact that this was a sham, that this was bogus, that these people had nothing on me and they were purely trying to silence me for my speech. I made a point of it in every preamble, in every opening statement of every pleading. And I just constantly, and on some level.
And you also worked very hard on this. How many hours a day did you spend on this?
I was working 4 to 6 hours a day after we would do the show on this stuff. And so, like, whatever it like, I don't, not every day, but on the days I would do it, it would be 4 to 6 hours of work and back and forth and you know, doing reading and looking stuff up and whatnot. So, you know, you just gotta keep doing it. And look, also putting all that stuff in there, putting all those political statements in there, like these were not just anodyne technical documents. I was making it known that this was a First Amendment issue. And that these were people who couldn't get anything real on me. So they were trying to find a way to suppress my free speech through the back door. And does this court, and I was even saying, does this court want to be party to that?
Yes.
Do you want to let yourself?
Remember, does this
court want to be known as a place where you can go just because you don't like someone's speech and you can file bogus complaints and get them shut down? Do you want to be party to damaging the First Amendment like that? I was saying these kinds of things. And look, you could say maybe that's overly bold, but look, I got out of the case.
You have to be bold, and again, you have to take calculated risks in, because remember, this isn't about, there is no magical authority that is going to be perfectly fair. This is about persuasion and political pressure.
Yeah.
So if you're able to exercise that in the right ratio, you can win. I'm not saying you're going to win every time. Sometimes you can work really hard and be totally innocent and still get fucked. But in many cases, if you fight very hard, if you do what Mike was doing, he was working 6 hours a day on this fucking thing, writing motions all the time, and you know, really just flooding
and
them
looking
with motions,
looking for openings. I wasn't just responding.
Toolbox, yes, every tool in your toolbox, using all of that to flood the enemy to the point where they're like, hey, you know what? We're better off not fucking with this guy.
One of the things that these attorneys were doing was they were doing a propaganda effort concurrently with their legal efforts. And I filed for sanctions against them for doing that. And I did that twice. One of my motions was thoroughly denied. Okay, and one of them was still pending when I was released from the suit, so the judge ruled it moot. I mean, it is what it is. You know,
right? They were using the case. So
they were using it, but they also stopped doing it after that.
Right.
You'll notice that they stopped doing it until Roberta Kaplan was going out there making videos about this, and she stopped. After that, now this video, which I complained about, she didn't do that anymore. And that motion was still on the table until the judge released me from the case.
Exactly.
And then, like, a couple of months later, I got a message like, oh, he just denied this motion as moot because you're not in the case anymore. And because, you know, it doesn't matter. But, like, it does, because the others in the case didn't join the motion, which I had encouraged them to do. So, again, these are the kinds of things you have to do. Because if they had joined it, he wouldn't have been able to dismiss it. It would still be pending. And he would have had to rule on it. He was relieved. Yes. He was relieved to get me out of the case, because then he doesn't have to rule on this, because she was so clearly out of bounds. And he doesn't want to rule against Roberta Kaplan, because she's a big, powerful lawyer with connections to the Democrat Party and Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So he doesn't want to rule against somebody that high up. So
exactly.
So he is absolutely, you know what? It's a small price to pay to let this guy out of the suit. So I don't have to rule on these motions where it's so clear that she's in the wrong. So they let me out. So you got to do these kind of things. Because these two lawyers, they think they can walk all over everybody. And until you show them that they can't, you got to put them in that kind of a bind. She broke every ethical rule in the book, and she assumed nobody would do anything.
They assume you're too dumb and poor to fight them on their frequency. And in some cases, they're right. You know, we do have fewer resources.
Unfortunately, a lot of cases there were. I mean, certainly mainly
we have fewer resources, both financially
we gotta have
and
bigger
in
brains.
Cases, intellectually.
Well, so. Look, we do have our share of big brains. And yes. And I think they're starting to when they realize that, like, dude, the other thing is, there's people out there that fucking hate me. Okay, there's people in the J left. They fucking hate me. Do you know how blackpilling it was for them when I got out of that case?
Yeah,
it was, because that was the main. That was, like, I don't want to be an asshole. Other than Spencer,
we won't name them, but there was people at.
Other than Richard, I was target number one. I was target number two
at a laughable media publication that were writing about how the TRS forum was going to get subpoenaed and everyone was going to get doxxed. Like, they were using that as a propaganda tactic to scare people. And when Mike got out of that suit, they were very upset about that.
They were really mad, and you know, and like I said, other than Richard, I was kind of the top guy in the case, and after that, you never heard my name mentioned when talking about the case. The media never reported on me getting out of it. Actually, one of them did, because I had developed a little bit of a relationship with the local reporter in Charlottesville, where I got her to write. Actually, the lawyers got extremely mad at her because I called her and I got her to write an article on the motion I filed for the to sanction Roberta Kaplan for her video. No other reporter would touch it, because I was getting asked, because every time a motion is filed, so this is another thing how these people work. This is all good stuff. I'll just let all this out because I can now. Yeah. What does it matter? So these people have a list of reporters that are their correspondents. So they created this group, Identity First for America, which is one. It's that's what collects donations. Or not Identity First. What am I saying? Integrity First. Integrity. Identity First for America.
Identity First is their real name.
That's what they call themselves when they're in their Passover seer. Yeah. It's Integrity First for America. The funny thing is, that account openly tweets about, like, Passover Seders and shit.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. I actually had this document I've been meaning to read, where it's like a Passover primer on how to talk to your family about the Charlottesville lawsuit. Like, how to tell, it was literally like, during your Seder, here's how you talk about Charlottesville with your family. I was like, holy shit.
Yes.
I have that. It's funny. It's just a two-page talking point. It's really stupid. But, so They have this list of reporters, and whenever a motion is filed by them or a decision is reached by the judge on any one of the motions that are pending, they write press releases to this list of reporters. And if you look, if you know who some of them are, and then you look at the articles that come out, the articles are just verbatim repeats of the press article, of the emails that go out. So they have this email list, and it's, the thing is, the interest in this case is low. Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's died down. It's a total shit show. So very few publications are writing about this anymore. But I discovered this when, after a motion was filed having to do with discovery issues, which was didn't apply to me anymore because I was out of the case, but I actually told the judge I didn't want the motion dismissed. I want, and so he listened. He kept it alive until he ruled on it. 8 months after I was released from the suit, he finally ruled on it. And I'm assuming because he had forgotten about it, and the lawyers just were breathing down his neck because it was preventing them from getting stuff from Twitter.
Right.
So he finally ruled against it. So all these by the way, no one's Twitter stuff is getting out there. Don't worry about it. But they finally this journalist, I get a bunch of calls from journalists one morning. I'm like, what the fuck? And the reason was because they were all just given this article to write by these people. So that's how they wage their press war. And so they're doing that at the same time that they're doing, and that's like, so they're waging this propaganda campaign. They're telling the press what to write about every motion. But if a motion doesn't go their way, then they don't write about it. Which is why when I got the one reporter at the Charlottesville Daily Progress to write about my motion about sanctioning Kaplan for her now this video, they were really mad because that reporter was not supposed to do that.
That's why we need our own press.
Which is also,
we're gonna work on that in the near future. I'll say this though. The media
just shows you how it's all a big
whining about
operation. Sorry.
The reason Jews are always whining about the free and fair press that is cheerleading Julian Assange's arrest.
Yeah, that's
the reason they're always whining about that is the media, just like in that documentary, The Lobby, right? What did the Jew say on the hidden camera? He said, anytime we need to put something into the mainstream consciousness, we call the Washington Post up and they just publish things verbatim. That's the relationship Jews have with the media.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's tempting to get angry at the little worm that is doing the calls and putting his name on the byline. But in reality, it's Jews that own these things that have the connection and send them out as their agents, yeah. Really.
Now, the people that are doing that, the reporters that call themselves reporters that do this, do deserve your contempt, but they're not pulling
absolutely
the strings.
Right, but you also have to know the context of the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So the media is just something they use to try and weigh the scales in their direction when they don't have a case. And that's how they work with all these things. One thing I'll say, I've been mentioning this a lot lately. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. The case of John Henry Falk versus Aware Inc.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This was during the McCarthy era. So there was an organization in the 50s and 60s composed of – it was a private organization. In fact, I think the SPLC, judging from the tactics they use, the SPLC is probably modeled after this organization. And it was riding the McCarthy red lists, black lists, and so on. And what Aware Inc. did is they were like a think tank composed of birchers who would provide blacklist to companies saying, hey, this guy's a communist, you better fire him or we're going to go to the media and say that you're a communist organization, right? So this guy John Henry Falk was blacklisted by Aware, and he sued them, and his lawsuit is remarkably similar to Gavin McInnes's SPLC lawsuit. It's almost word for word the same thing. And not to mention, I won't even get into the Allen lawsuit, which is like, that's going into like criminal.
Yeah.
Areas.
Yeah. It's high level like criminal stuff.
That's like, that's something that Aware Inc. wasn't doing. So anyway, the point I'm making here is that, John Henry Falk made, set this lawsuit in motion after he got fired. CBS, fired him. He was an entertainer on their TV shows. He got fired after receiving this blacklist in 1957. He couldn't, and because of the blacklist, he was never able to work in entertainment again, because they all got this blacklist from this organization. So long story short, he took legal action. He sued Aware Inc. for slander and interference in his ability to make a living. And he actually won the largest jury award for a libel lawsuit in American history at the time. He got $3.5 million, which in 1962 money is a shit ton of money. So point I'm making here is there is a case precedent for suing these fucking people.
Yeah.
And all these precedents were set when, you know, the communists were on the back foot. Now that the communists,
or they were
after the communists,
there was a fight being had. And Jews were on the side of communists there. And,
yes.
And so you can't discount that, but it is interesting.
The judge that presided over this is Abraham Geller.
Right.
So
there you go.
I understand all that, but case precedent.
I want to make sure the listeners understand all that.
Yeah, case precedent is case precedent.
Right. And the thing is, if they're gonna throw that precedent out, they have to explain why.
Exactly.
You have to tell us why. Why is it that a communist can't be blacklisted, but a white nationalist can? Explain it to me.
Yes.
Because there's nothing that the SPLC is if not a blacklist organization. And blacklisting is actually now illegal. If you can prove that there is a blacklist, that there's literally a list of people that go around, that is being circulated amongst corporations about not to hire somebody, you're blacklisted. It's illegal. Now, the thing is, there is such a list. It's the SPLC hate list. And so the question is, we have to make the law recognize that, because that's what that is. And they say this is free speech. But then they go out and they say, you have Mark Potok go out and say, of which there are ample recordings all over the internet, which are being used in both Gavin's lawsuit and in the Glenn Allen lawsuit, which say, no, our aim is to destroy these people. Well, now you're in different territory. Now you're not just saying that guy's a Nazi. Sure, you can say that guy's a Nazi. But when you say that guy's a Nazi as the SPLC, and when you have the power to get quoted in every media outlet because of your connections, when your own website is looked to, and when you have reporters that are willing to publish something simply on your say-so, where if the SPLC puts a new Nazi on their blacklist, well, they have a whole bunch of reporters they call. They will put that in every media outlet in the country. So what are you supposed to do? If you're a quote-unquote Nazi targeted by these people, what are you supposed to do?
The reason I brought this case up is the ACLJ wrote something on their blog saying that Gavin McInnes actually has absolutely no case, and that you don't have a right to not be listed as a Nazi. That's not within the First Amendment, and it's absolutely not true. It's a fucking – and of course the author was a kike.
Yeah.
So they will always do that. But the point I'm making here is also like the remarkable chutzpah. I mean, I probably shouldn't go on about double standards, but
I disagree with that, but let's talk about that in a second. Go ahead and say.
The remarkable chutzpah that the same communist Jews that still complain about McCarthyism
today, which was not even nearly what they say it was, by the way.
No. Of course not. It was actually quite limited. But really, what they say, Jews
didn't really suffer that much. But yeah,
no. But the point here is that the same people that complain loudly about McCarthyism, fucking 70 years later, take almost verbatim everything verbatim, and they basically copy every strategy they claim. They claim the McCarthyists and the Red Scare anti-communists used. So, like, this is rich. I mean, we're talking down to the accusations of being a Russian agent.
Yep.
Like,
I know, it's crazy. No, they didn't even change countries. They didn't even change countries. You would think that they it's crazy. It really is. And it's really funny. You do have a right not to be – now – again, someone can put out a list of Nazis, But if corporations start using that as a blacklist, then they're in trouble. That's the thing. What I want to have is the SPLC go ahead, put your little list out there. But any corporation refers to that and firing somebody, well, now you're in a lot of trouble. You're blacklisting.
And another thing too is like, you know, the First Amendment, like for example, if someone calls you a Nazi,
and if there's evidence of any kind of collusion or any kind of contact, any kind of conspiracy between the SPLC, the reporters, the corporations, between all these people in getting you fired, if these people are coordinating this, then that's absolutely a conspiracy to violate your rights.
If Amazon.com admits that they use the SPLC as their source for what books to ban, and you are a person who lives off of book sales, that, my friend, is blacklisting.
Yes. Okay?
So the point I'm making here is that this guy actually – what Falk did was he simply included the witnesses – that worked with him, like Tony Randall, all these famous figures. These were people that worked with him in the news industry. They took the stand and they affirmed that the man was not a communist. And, you know, again, this is like a model. You know, Gavin McInnes has built up this big network of Jews. Call these people in. Call in Ezra Levant. Call in you know, all these people. Call them and say, hey, this guy's not a Nazi. I own him.
It'll be an interesting test to see whether or not they would go to bat for him in this circumstance. Yeah. I'm interested to see whether they would do that. Now, on some level, they don't necessarily have a choice if he subpoenas them. But the question is, like, you know, because you get subpoenaed, you got to go. Right. So he could subpoena Ezra Levant and be like, it's relevant to my defense. You've got to come. And now Ezra Levant can fight the subpoena, but Gavin can, you know, he could say, I don't want to come. But the question is, would he do that? First of all, why does he even have to be subpoenaed? He should just volunteer to be a witness.
I think he will.
Yeah. I think he probably will.
You know what I think? I think that the jury in general is actually. There's something going on amongst the upper echelons of world jury because. The people that are resigning from the SPLC are largely Jewish. It's Cohen, it's Brownstein, it's all these very high-powered Jews.
Maybe they realize that there's bad optics going on here. This is a bad look. Like they've engendered – because the SPLC engendered – they got to the point where conservatives were not being cowards in the face of the SPLC.
Mm-hmm.
Where the conservatives – we're standing up to them. Conservatives were because like anybody on the right, you don't have to be a Nazi to hate the SPLC. Anybody on the right hates the SPLC. Anybody.
Right.
And so like even if you're just like a dumb grug brain like Fox News viewer, like these people hate the SPLC. Like the SPLC was actually exposing Jews, I think.
Yeah. Well, nah.
On some level. Well, look.
I think there is some kind of – because as I was telling you off the air before, the new interim president of the SPLC that me and Mike gave him the idea to hire is a black woman.
Yes. Well, that was their next move.
This woman, Karen Baines Dunning, wrote an op-ed in the Montgomery Advertiser. It's a paper that's very critical of the SPLC. But what I noticed in this article is she mentioned – her crusade against anti-Muslim bigotry, against anti-black racism, anti-immigration sentiment, homophobia. She didn't mention anti-Semitism.
That's extremely weird.
And that is something that the SPLC has focused on largely for the last 20 years at the very least. It's fighting enemies of Jews or critics of Jews and putting them on lists. So, I mean, you know, usually blacks – get a pass. They can be racist against anyone, but the black groups that are critical of Jews, including some of the leftist ones like the Black Writers Liberation Party, those guys get put on the hate map.
Oh yeah, they do, and they also get banned from Amazon. You know, Nation of Islam, their books that are attacking Jews, they're banned from Amazon.
Yes,
they have books that are attacking white people that you can still get, but you can't get. I think it's The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. You can't get that anymore on Amazon. Just like you can't get any white nationalist books. So, you know,
it's a fault line there. And that's Amazon. In fact, the Nation of Islam can technically sue the SPLC because that's obviously their call, right?
Right.
It's not any of the black groups that are doing that. It's the SPLC or the Anti-Defamation League.
Well,
the Anti-Defamation League is actually kind of they haven't really been the center of attention for a while. They seem to be playing it kind of low key. They're laying low.
The other thing the Anti-Defamation League doesn't do that the SPLC does, though, is go after conservative and Christians.
Yeah.
Like the Anti-Defamation League doesn't. Now, sure, they talk about gay people and such and not defaming them, but the SPLC goes after conservatives and Christians much harder than they do. So the ADL has still actually got a good reputation on the conservative right. They shouldn't, but they do. And the SPLC
doesn't. The ADL is actually
more
likely to go after a left-wing critic of Israel than they are.
Well, that's literally their. See, they are open about the fact that the only reason they exist is to protect Jews, and whatever else they do, whatever token put thing they say about a black or a homosexual is just token, and everyone kind of gets that. Where the SPLC, the thing with the SPLC, I think the reason the SPLC is losing power is one, they are clearly scamming people out of money, and a lot of people are mad about that. Two, they actually made themselves an enemy of the entire right, so they are not a group that conservatives cuck to. And so there was extremely bad press, and even to the point where in Glenn Allen's lawsuit was getting good press in the conservative media. That's very bad for Jews. Like, they don't, that's not good. Right. And so, and then they also, it's so bad now that they, Twitter removed them from their trust and safety team. They are not on the Twitter trust and safety team anymore.
Right.
And so now I don't know if that's a thing where Twitter realized there was possible legal ramifications to working with these people, or it was just optics or what. Now, I would love it if YouTube would follow suit and do the same. So the SPLC, because you remember we did that video on the SPLC within a half hour. Now, I have videos that were put in limited state that I appealed them, and the appeal is still pending. It's been like more than 30. It's like, and it's like, and the SPLC video went into limited state immediately, like a half hour after publication. And I appealed right away. And then within an hour of the appeal was denied.
Yeah. I forgot what it was, but there was some minor victory that we had, that nationalists in general, the entire movement had. Not longer. I forgot what it was.
Maybe it was them leaving Twitter. I don't know.
No. But I don't know what it was. I think this was before that. But as soon as that people were celebrating that stuff, literally every single video on Borzoi's channel, every People's Square.
Yeah.
They
every
all
single
got
one.
Flagged without any explanation.
That
they
also
all got
happened,
put into limited state.
That happened a few days after they did the same thing to Dawson.
Yeah, and that was obviously the ADL or the SPLC, frankly, lashing out. Like, they were just – they were lashing out like
– I remember – I can't remember. There was some – you're right. There was some minor victory we had. Like, somebody was exposed or there was a court case. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. And that's someone that just was so emotionally overwhelmed.
They were just mad, so they just lashed out by doing it. Now, I believe – Did those videos get appealed, and has the limited state been removed, or are they just all limited state?
No, I think they're still pending on that. And also, there's like 80 videos. You have to go manually appeal.
Yeah, whenever that happens, then you know that it's actually – it's somebody with some kind of higher level access that can do that in a batch. You know, I don't think it's a bot. Like Dawson was saying, it was a bot for him. I mean, see, he was saying he got report botted, like, and that I believe that they do. But, you know, he got to the point where they removed his channel, and he got it back through an appeal. But, you know, it was so bad. He was saying, like, his inbox started filling up with emails about complaints again about his videos, and they just shut down his channel. I think he was able to show YouTube, like, look, I was being – now, because report spamming is illegal under the – not illegal, but it's against their terms. So if you're a victim of it, you can theoretically protest, which he did. But he's still on thin ice. Like, he still is, like, one strike away from being removed from YouTube. And now Dawson legitimately never does.
He's not racist.
He doesn't even talk race.
His co-host is part Jewish.
Yeah, but it doesn't. They don't care because the criticism of Israel is too on point, you know. And his stuff. And I'll just say this also: his stuff gets banned, shut down, and blocked. I don't see that happening to all these 9/11 truth videos. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing that out there for you.
And those people were I noticed. I one of the videos that you put up. I think it was the live show. That video was getting brigaded by hologram planers controlled demolition guys. It was just totally getting brigaded, and it actually makes no real sense because 9/11 was not really talked about. So
it might. There's people that just have a chip on their shoulder about me specifically on that issue, because I just take Dawson's narrative. I'm just like, look, I believe that Jews and Israel was behind this on some level,
yes.
But I don't believe that there were no planes, and I don't believe that there were no Arab hijackers. Like, you know, and look, why would you're not going to get 20 Jews to commit suicide? No, they're going to use proxies.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So let's get to Sri Lanka.
Yes. So
Sri Lanka.
These Easter worshippers, I mean, Christians, I'm sorry. Now, I do think that I want to talk about that for a second. I don't know if that's the thing you wanted to open with, but the Easter worshippers thing, I found it weird that this sort of awkward phrase. Now, technically they were worshiping on Easter. I don't find the phrase itself offensive, but it's just odd that every elite level account like Obama and Hillary, I mean, someone did a screen cap of all these really high level people, and it wasn't just Easter worshipers. It was the whole phrasing of all of their messages was very, very similar. And I was like, well, this is like some PR agency that's writing this shit, or this is some messaging that was decided at a high level that all of these elite level accounts who, you know, these people don't do their own tweets. Like Obama and Hillary are not sitting there with the phone like Trump does it himself, but they don't, you know. So because Trump says shit literally no one else says, even if it's no one else saying it because it's remarkably stupid. But like, those are all managed, heavily managed accounts, and they're all saying the same shit at the same time. It's weird, and it gives people a creepy feeling, and that's why I think people reacted negatively to it also, because they did neglect to say who was the victims, which was Christian.
Yeah, and another thing too is so here's my take on that. That was definitely like a panel of public relations people that came up with that phrase. So what you get is that can in text, Easter worshiper can be read in two ways, right? The technical and semantic meaning of that is true. Like it is technically true. These were people worshiping on Easter, right? But at the same time, that phrase was designed to divorce it from the actual context of the incident.
Right. Exactly.
And it was Sunni Wahhabis blew up a church full of Christians, primarily.
And it removes the powerful identifier of what they were and the reason behind it, right? It's like, they are Christian. That's a much more powerful thing to say than Easter worshippers. So they're already watering it down because, as you said, it removes the identity of them as Christians is why those. And of course, Easter is important because it's their most holy holiday. But can you imagine Ramadan worshippers being used? Right. So you don't like the double standard stuff. I did want to address that. I think it's useful because I think.
Oh, no, I agree.
A lot of times,
I said most people don't like the double standard stuff, but actually, like, average people do. Because
that's my point.
Most white people have
big brained alt-right people that have been in this community for a while. I understand. I get it. You're bored of it. Fine. But we are trying to reach other people, and normies do not like double standard. It actually pisses them off.
It hurts their sense of honor.
Yeah. It pisses them off. So it's useful to point it out. So, yeah, I've said that.
That's why every boomer on Facebook is like, why can black people be proud?
Yeah, why can't I have people? Why can't white people have a white student organization? Right? And I get it. Like, I get why you might think that's a little bit of an old thing. But, hey, if normies are upset about it, then that's a clue that we should be honing in on that and using it because, I remember we did the white student union troll a while ago, and Heimbach actually did a white student union years ago, and that worked. because so many people were willing to say, well, black students have everything that they want. Now, of course, what boomers won't say is Jewish students do as well. They won't say that. But
the point is, just like the people who criticize the SPLC never criticize the ADL.
Right. Yeah.
It's taboo because the ADL is an explicitly Jewish organization.
Yeah.
And that's where their bagel's buttered. Yeah. So they don't go there.
Their bagel is schmeared.
That's where they're
you know, I know which side of the bagel is schmeared.
It's schmeared. And what I will say though is that it's a load of shit. I mean, compare that to Brett and Tarrant.
Yeah.
Everyone was saying this was
these were not mosque. What if these were mosque attendees? Brett and Tarrant shot mosque attendees.
Yes.
I just imagine.
Exactly.
Anyway, yeah.
And divorce, because they made sure to add the political part, which is this is the threat of white nationalism, and they even got themselves a hearing out of it. Which was a total disaster, because once you actually see these people, you just realize they're both creepy and retarded. I don't know if you saw Christopher Mathias on MTV News.
I did. If
you didn't, don't worry, because no one else saw it either.
That's the funny thing. There's like no buzz about these people anymore at all.
Dude, I saw it on the Twitter of MTV News, and it had 15 retweets. I get more.
Oh, dude, these people's engagement, like I said, is crashing like housing prices in 2008. Like,
I'll tell you
nobody gives a shit.
He was making like poopy and fart jokes and stuff, and I'm like, you know,
he was probably told to do that to appeal to the MTV audience.
But who is it?
Dude, I don't even know.
I mean, you're Gen X. Do you still watch MTV?
No, I haven't watched MTV in at least 30 years.
Yeah,
like, literally exactly. 30 years before you were born. I haven't watched MTV since you were born.
I'll tell you what though, man.
I watched MTV in like the early to mid 80s when I was a little kid. That's it.
Yeah, and people would put it on the background for the music videos and so on. But anyway, you know, when you actually get to see these people off of Twitter, I mean, when they're on Twitter, they're a roaring lion. They are a mixture of Yezov, the NKVD butcher, and you know, what is it? You know, maybe Himmler. Even they might not like that comparison. I'm not making that comparison exactly, but they're very ferocious on Twitter. But then when you actually see them on TV or you see them in the Congress testifying, like they're just creepy and retarded. C and R is the main way to describe them. Because and that's the real reason why that white nationalism hearing was a fucking disaster for them.
Well, also it was the Zoa who was completely focused on Islam and not on white nationalism. Like, Morton Klein, who as I think Jazz Hand said, he was running the Windows 95 version of Zionism. He was just going with he even said like. None of the threats that are like he's like we have all these Jewish students on campus that get these death threats daily. None of them from white supremacists. All of them from Students for Justice in Palestine and BDS. Now, of course, that's a lie too.
Yeah,
but like it's just funny. Which he's like, no. It's like Morty. What are you doing, Morty? We're updating the lies. Like we're going with different lies than what you were going with in 1995.
I think the problem is that because Jews – see, this is why I applaud people like Ilhan Omar when they go after Israel, because the Jews right now feel that they're under siege from both the left and the right.
Yep.
And so you kind of have them in a confused frenzy trying to figure out who to target. Who's the priority? Should we target these Muslims, these, you know, up and coming Muslims that are attacking the Jews from the left? Or, well, it's not really left. It's in the case of Ilhan Omar, maybe, but you know, in many cases, it's just Muslims.
Yeah. If you remember the lobby when that guy said, now the lobby was filmed. I think that secret video was taken in like 2015 or so, and then they put it out in 2016, right? And that guy said in 2015, 2016, he was saying, we are having a hard time on campuses with the left.
Yes.
And he's saying, and we are anticipating that when all of these leftist students grow up and become Democrats, that we're going to have a harder time with the Democrat Party.
Right.
But since then, we have made it so they are having a hard time with the right as well.
That's coming to fruition right now.
And they said that on the right, like, support for Israel has dropped 12% in the last 2 years.
That's what I was telling Richard yesterday.
That is our – we did that. We did that. And that is going
to
create –
that's why they're coming after us.
Yeah. And so they used to be able to count on the right as a bulwark, a Zionist bulwark. I mean, that's even what William Crystal was calling his stupid new magazine, right? The Bulwark.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and another thing, like,
so there's no one in the youth. There's no one, and I'm not saying that that Zoomers are necessarily all right.
No.
But there's no constituency for Israel in the youth.
Nope.
There's no Zionism. One thing, now there are woke Zoomers and there are alt-right Zoomers, but there's no Zionist Zoomers.
Nope.
Unless they're Jewish.
Yeah, or paid to be so.
Yeah.
Like Charlie Kirk Shills. Or something.
Yeah. Well, he's a millennial, but whatever.
Like, really, like, it's actually really expensive to pay a Zoomer or even a millennial to go out and support Israel.
Because nobody wants to hear it.
You have to pay $100,000 in Facebook ads and $300,000 for Ben Shapiro and just in Facebook ads to try and make it catch. And the only and imagine how angry they are when the only people clicking on the Facebook ads are like over 65.
Yeah, that's what's going to be. I'm telling you, if you're spending that on Facebook, you're just going to get a bunch of fucking stupid boomers. A lot of them probably Jews themselves.
Clicking
on that shit. Yeah.
Yes,
everyone in Palm Beach is. You're getting a high response for the Ben Shapiro Facebook ads in Palm Beach.
You're getting a decent,
getting a good. We're getting a good click ratio in Palm Beach. It's working out.
Things. The map is beeping over Curious Joel.
Yes, exactly. You're getting a good like heat map.
I think. But you're absolutely right. And one thing I read an article in Tablet Magazine. I'm not sure if you read it. The Jews are very black-pilled right now.
Yeah.
I talked about this with Richard too. Like the tone of that Tablet Mag piece is actually completely on point. What he's saying is that the Democratic Party has always been where Jews feel the most at home, but now it's very hard for them to feel that way because supporting Israel has become a political liability.
Yep.
So you have Beto O'Rourke, who is totally in the pocket of Jews and Zionists, having to pretend that he's not just to get not booed.
Yeah.
Just to not get pelted with tomatoes. So, like, just to even have a chance. So, you know, you look at the candidates that are
– the same thing with Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris even said they had to all skip AIPAC. And then one of Kamala Harris's people accidentally let it slip. Well, AIPAC just came to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you weren't supposed to say that, moron. But, like, at the same time, yes, AIPAC came to her because she's still in their pocket. But she couldn't openly go to their thing.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They have to optics police.
Yeah, optics cuck.
Being pro-Israel.
Yeah.
And the pro-Israel arguments, you know, now that
they're
the, you know,
so bad.
Two things that go hand in hand are Zionism and warmongering.
Yeah.
So the GOP is now against war in overwhelming numbers. GOP voters, not the politicians
who are
the voters in overwhelming numbers. You know, the same white people that lost their children or became scarred, physically disabled forever because of the two Jewish wars that we fought. Those people now are sick of it.
And they couldn't the remarkable thing about that, they couldn't do their sunk cost fallacy bullshit with these people. You know, they couldn't continue to say, well, you sacrificed for this, so it's still worth something. All those people were of the, and I know some people that fought in those wars that all agree. And I've heard people say, like, you can't tell vets that the wars were worthless and they got played. I'm like, are you kidding me? You can't tell them anything else.
Yeah.
You try and come at them with a bunch of bullshit. They'll come right back at you like, fuck you. I fought for a bunch of corporate bullshit in Israel and don't fucking try and patronize me.
Yeah. And usually the people that are like telling them, oh, thank you. You did a great job.
They laugh at that.
They don't just laugh at that, but those people are like Tom Clancy types that never serve in the military.
Of course they are. And, so they and veterans, like, legitimately, I'm telling you, people that fought, like, laugh at that shit. Like, they make, after, if you do that, they will laugh at you after you walk away. Like, what the fuck is wrong with this asshole?
Yeah. Yeah, and so those
which shows you what a joke, which shows you what a joke patriotism is. And I don't want to be an asshole, but it really is. Now, in patriotism, America, patriotism shouldn't be a joke. It's a sad state of affairs, but there we are.
There was just Jews trying to manipulate us
because it's all because Jews hacked American patriotism for their own shit, and now it's just a fucking sick joke.
Well, the point is though, is that the Zionists understand that the fact that whites now are leading. The right wing white people are now the ones that are the most anti-intervention.
Yeah,
That goes hand in hand with opposition to Israel, because if you're going to argue like why we should be in Syria, and no one believes your gas killing animal meme, the only thing you can do is tell them the truth. And when you tell them, oh well, we have to do it for Israel, and people will just laugh in your fucking face. And I think, between the Democrats and the Republicans, I think Jews are going to have to try and retrench or do a kind of backpedal a little bit on the Israel stuff. I don't know what they're going to do, but there's clearly some tension because the dueling freaks, the kinky haired Harry Potter Jew broad from the ADL dueling with the that guy.
And then with an obese black woman in the middle.
Yeah. Like so the ADL woman's like, no, we gotta go after white people because they have they're dangerous. Yeah,
it's
dangerous
basically
Jews. And then Mort Zuckerman's like, no, we have to.
Now that panel,
we have to get the Muslims. The Muslims are the dangerous ones.
Yeah, I know. It was amazing. And that panel was the two Jews and then four blacks. And really, those black people were props, and the two Jews were just taking sort of, you could argue, you could say left, right, or however you want to do it. They're doing like the, I was calling it Jignats versus Optics Cucks, but like you could call it whatever you want, like the sort of, the ZOA, the Zionist organization, which is the Mort Klein, like we got to go after the Muslims, and then like the liberal cat lady who's like, we got to go after the whites. And it's like, that's great that's what they turned into.
By the way, they both agreed that both groups should have their free speech curtailed. They both agreed on that premise.
They would both
who gets prioritized.
Yeah, it was basically priority, and they both prefaced their statements. I mean, well, at least Morton Klein had to preface his statements by saying, yeah, of course, white supremacists should get, should get repressed and everything. But he is reflecting.
The ADL also made a statement against Ilhan Omar. So,
yeah, yeah. And so, of course, he is running the sort of Windows 95 Zionism because, in 1995, Zionists were not worried about white supremacists. They were only worried about Muslims.
Yeah,
and so it's just like nobody updated this fucking guy. It's pretty funny. But it's great that hearing became that, so America can look and see. And it's like now the having the blacks there for the average grug brain, I guess muddies the waters, if you will, because they will then look at them as agents in the thing, but they're clearly not particularly the representatives of tech companies. Now, the one black woman who was the representative of something like the Human Rights Initiative, she was basically just repeating everything that the ADL woman was saying.
Yeah.
So she was just there as just like just another voice, and she was like this huge, just unbelievably fat black woman, or maybe average weight for black woman. I don't know. But so that was what she was doing. And then they had the two representatives from Google and Facebook who, of course, how many PR reps do they really have that are black?
Yeah. Right?
I mean,
I wonder what they were thinking with that. Were they thinking like, "Oh, this will get the heat off of us" or something?
I'm thinking it's like, I mean, amazingly, there was not a single white person at that hearing. It was Jews and blacks, and everyone who sent the rep sent a black. And, you know,
that's kind of like, you know, my idea went up, you know, back in the many, many years ago, in like 2015, when I supported, when I was in TWP, it was still around. I had an idea of like putting, like hiring a bunch of Mexican day laborers and putting them in TWP shirts and then sending them out when the Antifa were about to protest.
Well, I mean, that's kind of dishonest, but it's like, you know,
well, that's what they were doing.
No, I know it's what they were doing. When we did, it's bad enough to get them attacking people that are standing up or something. Like when they attacked us at the anti-war rally, that was horrible for them. That was really bad. They were not happy about any of that.
You didn't see them really writing anything about Patriot Front protesting against AIPAC, did you? I didn't see.
They completely avoid that. That was just buried.
One article was written about this shit. Not one.
Because what are they going to say?
Every city.
What can they say? Because, see, the thing is, if you're Antifa, what do you say about that? Because they're not supposed to reveal that they like AIPAC. And these guys are not supposed, like, because they don't like, because they're rank and file people that get into it because they're kind of useful idiots that read Noam Chomsky books or whatever. Like, they don't like AIPAC. What can they say? There's nothing and that's another problem for them. They can't say anything about that. You know?
Right.
And of course, when you know, the kind of attention you get for protesting AIPAC, it's like they bypass Antifa. They go right to the FBI.
Yeah.
You know? But
but not one thing. I mean, you understand, Mike, very well how these people, they will write 500-word articles, 1,000-word articles about who retweeted
about a sticker.
Or a sticker or a flyer or bullshit like that, and then here you have actual white nationalists protesting the AIPAC lobbies across America Not one HuffPo asshole, not one Daily Beast asshole, no one. Why? Do you know why that is? That's because internally it starts an uncomfortable conversation for Jews, and they're forced to show their power levels. You see, people think that Jews have this like magic dictatorship where they're totally above everything and all the same pitfalls and follies that we have ideologically. But believe it or not, at places like the Daily Beast, someone like Michael Weiss spends a lot of time hiding his power levels. And what I mean by that is his fanatical, rabid Zionism. Okay, so he does comment on it, but you know, he's also courting woke leftists. So he's got to strike that balance. And if he's writing an article about white nationalist bigots and anti-Semites attack poor innocent Jews at AIPAC, that's going to start a very uncomfortable conversation, not just amongst readers, but even in his own office with some of these younger hipster types. You know?
Yeah, because a lot of them don't realize what it is that they're doing. I mean, you get people that are a little bit older and more cynical and just care about money, and they know exactly what they're doing. But you get – or care about money and upcomings and having their name out there and whatever. But you get some of these people – yeah, that's a problem. It's not comfortable for them. It's like they don't – particularly if you – how can you pose as a woke liberal and sometimes even like an Antifa or an anarchist and be – really Zionist? The contradiction is too great. How and that's a conversation you can't have. Like, you can't explain that.
Well, it exposes you.
As Bill O'Reilly says, you can't explain that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it exposes you as a
hypocrite.
As it not just a hypocrite, but as disingenuous. You don't actually believe in anything you're saying. I mean, it's like these anarchists I was telling you before, you know, the Sri Lanka bombing.
We didn't actually get back to that, so we should go back to that.
My take on that is, you know, conservatives are going to respond in the same non-racial way as usual. It's about Christians and this and that. But the leftists are actually doing something kind of smart. Some of the smarter ones are. The really stupid ones, like at the Washington Post, are like the Nazis are going to use this for their own thing. You know, those are really stupid people. But there's a couple of leftists that are kind of trolling conservatives by saying, "Oh, that bombing was terrible. It's a sign that shows that, you know, we need more curtailments of speech to protect minorities, whether in America or in Sri Lanka, because it's hate speech that led to these people to bomb this church. So, you know, we need to protect Christians as a minority in Sri Lanka, which is never going to happen, as much as we need to protect, you know, minorities in America and in Europe.
Yeah, I mean,
and what can they possibly say to that? I mean, they are setting themselves up for that argument, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the government, they don't really, I mean, that there is like a ethnic strife on Sri Lanka between two different groups, and I believe there's also a religious divide between those groups. I think there's the Tamil ethnicity, and then there's another one, and then Islam gets involved in the mix. I'm not sure on the specifics of all of it. I read a book about it many years ago, but I can't remember all of it.
Tamil Tigers, those guys were fucked. They had child suicide bombs.
Yeah, actually an article by – it was a book by a Jew who's talking about, you know, suicide bombing was invented to kill Jews except in this one other case. And I was like, okay, guy.
Yeah.
But basically, though – That fight is not one that really on either side the U.S. is particularly invested in, which is why you don't hear much about it. But yeah, I think that they even this being about Christians became a little bit fraught for them, because otherwise they would have said it, and they didn't say it. So there was something going on there. And yes, I have seen the really dumb ones at the Washington Post who said, bombings in Sri Lanka stoke far right anger. And I was like, okay, like that's the only people that were angry. I mean, it's, they didn't say the only people, but there's an implication there that people pick up on. And it's like, okay, so is there a reason that people shouldn't have been angry? You know, cause there's always an accusatory tone when they put far right or alt right in a headline. There's an accusatory tone that you're not supposed to feel this way. Right. I mean, that's the implication of anything where they include that in one of their own headlines in the Jewish press.
Right. The person who, I don't know who wrote that, but whoever wrote that for the Washington Post, like they've actually done a remarkable thing, which is to be dumber than conservatives. So they played right into cuck hands by doing that. Cause now they can say, look, Christianity is under attack around the world. The truth of the matter is that most leftist, like actual firm antisocial people in charge of our media, they don't feel any particular resentment against the Christian minority of Sri Lanka. I mean, no, they do to an extent, the real bone to pick that Jews have with Christianity is as a sort of source of white civic life. Of European civic life. I mean, what they really hate about Christianity are the Greco-Roman ethics of it. And that is something that we carry in our veins.
Well,
so
there's like, that. There's also specific. Now there's, if you get into esoteric Judaism and stuff, there's specific gripes of Christianity. I don't want to get into that. There are Jews that hate Christianity.
Yeah, like the Talmud.
For Christianity, right? There are Jews like that.
The Talmud is literally a troll.
A diatribe against Christianity, yeah.
I wouldn't even go that far. It's more or less a troll. It's like literally the Talmud is saying Jesus is boiling in his own shit and the Virgin Mary is a slut. So it's like the Talmud is.
Yeah.
It's like those 4chan. Are like Daily Stormer headlines.
Yeah. Exactly. No, it is. It's like Jewish Daily Stormer. And that's why, you know, in the past, when people got a hold of this, people were like, wait, what the fuck is this? And it's part of like this thing that they play, like they have it, and but they don't want you to see it. I mean, you can't get a copy of this book, and they know it's because
I was showing someone that doesn't know much about politics or anything. I was showing them the Talmud, like quotes from it. I'm like, yo, this book is so extreme that it tells you that if a Gentile reads it, you have to kill him. Come on, Siege can't beat that.
No, it's really bad Siege posting, and yeah, that's why you can't get a copy of it. And you know, one of the gripes that the funniest thing is when if you were looking at Twitter, if you're looking at Hebrew language Twitter while Notre Dame was burning, now if you thought there was vitriol from the Jewish Worker, some of these freaking bearded rabbis in all Hebrew, man, you should have seen what they were saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, Twitter has that, that nifty little translate button. It doesn't always give you good translations, but it gives you the gist of it. And some of it was even difficult to understand, even in the English translation. But the tone of it's not difficult to understand. And they were saying, like, oh, why should I weep for Notre Dame when in the 13th century, a copy of the Talmud was burned on its steps? I'm like,
yeah.
Well, no, I don't give a fuck if you weep, but maybe everybody, Europeans, maybe white people should all know that this happened and think about why. You know,
it was called, just for historical context, it was called the Disputation of Paris. It was in 1240, yeah. And this was when Nicholas Donin, he was actually a Jew, was raised a Jew, who converted to Christianity, one of the few genuine converts. This guy, so the Talmud was written, I believe, in the 7th century, okay? So the Catholic Church, and this is reactionary.
It's complicated. There's two versions of the Talmud, and it was written over a long period of time as well.
Sure.
Getting added to, et cetera, but yeah.
But it was around for, like, at least 500 years. That's how stupid the Catholic Church was. They, you know, these people living in your country, and they have this book that's the center of their religion. You have no idea what's in it. And so Nicholas Donin was raised on the Talmud, and he showed it to Pope.
Yeah.
Showed it to Pope Gregory, I believe, is Gregory the Ninth, and said, "Hey, look what they're saying about Jesus. Like, you guys have burned books from Greeks and Roman pagans and all this and that because it's blasphemous. But what about this book? Look at this. This isn't just blasphemy. This is like someone saying, you know, the Virgin Mother is a prostitute."
Which it and does say. I mean, it says that.
It says that.
She was a hairdresser that was, like, sleeping with Roman soldiers. Which is effectively
right. That's like literally like a 14-year-old.
They're calling her like a thought.
They're saying, like,
they're thought patrolling.
Mary is a thought. Yeah.
it's like
trolling, thought patrolling. And so anyway, the Disputation of Paris was, they got these Franciscan, I believe it was, these were Franciscan scholars that were very well versed in theology. They read the Talmud, and they brought one of the leading rabbis over to debate it. And this was I believe it was Yishol of Paris or something. There was a bunch of representatives of the Jewish community. Now, just as a side note, not one actual white nationalist was invited to the congressional hearing, right?
They still invited a Jew even 800 years ago.
Yes, but look at how different it is when the Western man controls his society. They invited. They saw this book. It was horrifying. Jews were suspected of ritually murdering Christians and so on. And when this controversy emerged, they invited leaders of rabbis and scholars from the Jewish community to come out and explain themselves, to defend themselves. They believed they had a right to a defense. How different. These were in the supposed Dark Ages. And they had more fucking – they had more free debate back then.
Yeah, and then so, Napoleon also – well, I mean, later on, Napoleon – brought the Jews again to Paris, and he had them disavow it.
So basically,
he gave them an opportunity to, and all these secular Jews that wanted to still, they did disavow it. Yeah. Anyway,
so basically, what happened here was that the rabbis just lied. They're like, oh no, that was a different Jesus we were talking about.
Oh yes, they did some serious. Yeah,
no, that's that other Jesus.
They were saying, like, ridiculous. Like, it's like, what? But then I mean, these Jews that were doing it a couple hundred years ago for Napoleon, where he did a similar thing. He brought them to Paris and he said, "Do you want to be Jews or do you want to be French? Do you believe in this? Do you believe that or whatever?" And they all said, "Oh no, we want to be French. We don't. We're not going to put Judaism first. We're beyond all that Talmudic stuff. We don't want to do that." Now, some of them might have been telling the truth, but there's no reason to believe it. So they kind of like fooled Napoleon. You know,
what really made the Christians angry. It wasn't just the stuff about Jesus and Mary. Like, they have, like, porno in there. Like, they have, like, things where, like, someone gets their dick chopped off and, like,
yeah, it's Adam really, is getting it's a blowjob. Really weird, dude. It's so weird and Jewish.
It's fucking, it's really vile. And so basically what they did is they collected all the Talmuds they could and they burned them for obscenity. You know, back then there was no internet, so it was harder. You know, now if you want to burn a book, you just take it off of Amazon. But back then you actually had to physically burn it.
They had to track down all the copies.
Exactly.
So of course, that also then impedes their ability to copy it again, because that's what, you know, that's what the Jews are constantly copying and recopying these texts.
Right.
And that's part of where some people speculate that's even where some of their verbal acuity comes from, is the fact they're always doing this. But, yes. You know, even Jesus, you know, when I was a little kid, I talked about this, how when I was a little kid, I went to the Episcopal Church, and I went almost every Sunday. It was unusual if I didn't go until I was like, you know, 20 years old, because I went with my family to the Episcopal Church. And I remember day in, day out, year after year, hearing the readings and the translation of the Bible they used at my church would always say chief priest and scribe. Mm-hmm. And they were just meant Jews. They never told us that, though.
Right, right. And I think so the main thing to take, that was just like a little bit of history of that, how, you know, these people saw this as an attack on Western civilization, and they're right.
And they weren't wrong. But we've all forgotten that, or just not even forgot. We never learned it. Almost nobody, you have to, and this is another one of those things where you start telling people this story. Now, I didn't know this story either. I'll have to do some reading on it because it sounds interesting. Or at least I only knew the rough outline of it.
There's a whole chapter in E. Michael Jones's book on this. It's very good.
So that is absolutely worth reading for that kind of stuff, even if you don't want to adopt everything that E. Michael Jones believes. I believe that you can get something out of everything.
The research is amazing.
Even without fully adopting the point of view of the book, which is what people say. A lot of people say that about other books like Culture of Critique and you know, Douglas Reed. Like, you don't have to agree. Like, there's a lot of things in Douglas Reed I disagree with. However, his research and his talking about particularly World War One and Zionism in England is very, very good, and stuff you don't see anywhere else. So it's even these documents.
You have to
learn
how to take things and you know, take things as they come. You don't have to swallow.
You don't have to
everything.
Agree with everything everybody,
you know,
says.
I mean, I personally do like vodka and I do like whiskey, but I hate gin. But you put a little tonic, you take the gin, you put a little tonic in it, it's delicious. So, you know, just do that. Take E. Michael Jones's research and add some tonic to it.
Yeah. I mean, the history alone is worth reading. So, but the, you know, the thing is, though, the Jews remembered, right? These rabbis remembered. And they were pissed, and they were laughing about Notre Dame burning because of an insult, what they saw as an insult 700 years ago.
My God.
And they were laughing about it, and they were loving it. And now, of course, there's also the statues that are in front of Notre Dame. And then it led some Jews, you know, some people actually went, and these were older articles from the last few years, where if you look at Haaretz or some of these other Jewish, like the Jerusalem Post or something, they'll have these articles. They're like, Europe's history of anti-Semitism is etched in stone. And then they'll tell you where in Europe you can find sculptures, and they're everywhere, that are openly anti-Semitic. And a lot of times they're on churches.
They're literally warning future
generations. And that's what I'm saying. I'm like, maybe we should take heed to our ancestors. Why did they do this? Why did they carve in stone all over Europe warnings about Jews? I mean, why did they do that? Everyone talks about the wisdom of the ancestors. Well, I believe it.
I believe it. Like, there's literally warnings out you're right, outside of the
Oh, did you see this thing? This Jew was complaining on Twitter. I actually retweeted it because it was funny. These people in this town in Poland, every Good Friday, they beat an effigy of Judas, but it really is just, it's just like, it's got like curly locks and a big nose and stuff. Yeah. And they still do it. They still do this.
Well, that's an old tradition.
I know. And of course, and then they show the one that they did in 1941. Of course, it's got a big yellow star on it and such, you know. And they had pictures of that. So it's like, yeah. I mean, but there's some of these villages out in Eastern Europe, in Poland, and these places where they still do it. And they're not shy about what the fact they're doing.
In Iberia, too, I forgot which one it was, but they used to have a town called, like, it translates into English as Killed Jews.
Well,
Matahudis.
But Matahudis?
Yeah, that's like the name. I think I'm pretty sure if I'm remembering correctly, but that's for a fact that in the Balkans they still do those.
Because there's some Spaniards with the name Matamores, which means kill Moors. So
that's pretty funny. Your name is a Fed post.
My name is literally just a Fed post. But you know, I think they used to do this in a lot of parts of Europe where they would be. I mean, the Judas goat, like they'll kill a goat saying this is Judas, right? Like,
people can think that's a little whatever, but. I mean, compare that to Jewish rituals like Purim. What do they do? They literally reenact cannibalism.
Also,
they have pastries that are modeled after
the body parts. And they'll sell that in a Jewish deli today.
Yes.
You go to a Jewish deli today on Purim, you can ask for a Haman's ear, which is a little pastry in the shape of an ear, which is meant you're eating the ear of Haman, who never really even existed. It's a story, you know, but it's just like, he actually didn't. It's unlikely that he did. It's unlikely that he did. No, the story of the Book of Esther is completely made up. Yeah, but it wouldn't be the first time they completely made something up. Haman,
the Talmud says that the Romans killed 60 million Jews in the siege of Jerusalem.
That's ridiculous. Well, the funny thing is, if you read the Book of Esther, first of all, it's considered to be a complete fabrication, and they don't think that anyone named Haman existed because they claim that he was the last surviving Amalekite and that he then was influencing the king of Persia, who then Esther sleeps with the king of Persia, of course. And it's the one book, interestingly, it's also the one book in the Bible in which the God is never mentioned. There's no mention of the word God or the Lord or any of that. So it's purely a human story. It's a human drama. And Esther sleeps with the king, and then he says, he changes his mind. He kills Haman's 10 sons in front of him. Then they kill Haman. Then the Jews are given permission by the king of Persia to take their revenge, and they go and kill 75,000 Persians.
Yeah.
And this is a story. It's totally made up, but, you know, there you are.
Yeah. No, definitely. Last thing I want to get to, Eastern Europe stuff.
Okay. All right.
So we had a couple of things. We can get through this in like 20 minutes, but 500,000 Pakistanis to be brought to Romania by 2020.
Oh, my God.
500,000. This is a nation of 20 million people. So what is that? 0.5% will be Pakistani. They're in talks with the
500,000 out of 20 million. No, 500,000. That's 5%.
Is it?
Yes.
When? Oh fuck, man! God damn! I shouldn't have skipped school during math.
No, it's 2.5%. My bad. 2.5%. Sorry.
2.5. So, yeah, this is a country. I mean, you know, Romania has gypsies, but. You know, this is a country that, well, first of all, you know, let's just say xenophobia in describing Romanian history would be an understatement with Vlad the Impaler. There's no history of this nonsense going on here. And yet here we have, again, this is, listen, I know I often get called a Putin shill, a Nazbol. It's usually by people who are retards who then call you that. And then they basically, like, anytime you criticize NATO or the European Union or the relationship countries like Romania or Ukraine have with the EU, the kind of very fanatical anti-Russian types, they just post a picture of Vladimir Putin with a Jew somewhere. Like, that's their response. Like, they don't even bother defending this.
I don't even see that very much anymore, but yeah.
I still get it because I think there's, like, some coordination going on where they target me and probably Richard even more. But they target us because, you know, I'm never going to support NATO. I'm never going to support
anyone
advancing the interests of NATO. And yes, I do believe between the two, I do think Russia has a lot of bad stuff, and I understand that people in the Baltics are in a tough spot. But with that said, there's no chance in fucking hell that Russia isn't the lesser of two evils between these two. There is no third choice. It's either you join the EU and you get Globo Homo and 500,000 Pakistanis, or you get in with Russia and deal with the corruption and deal with some of the bad stuff. Maybe they'll make fun of you for being a smaller country or something, but, like, you know, it's still more normal. So Romania is having this issue right now. I wanted to also bring up in Poland. You know, Poland is a supposedly a Catholic country. I talk to Catholics all the time, and you know, trad Catholics, and like, yeah, Poland is the future. Poland is the most Catholic country in Europe, and so on. They have a birth rate that, if you first of all, they have a population growth that is in the negative because of all the emigration, and their birth rate is not that different from Germany. Oh my God.
Their birth rate is 1.32 births per woman.
I always thought that,
according to the World Bank in 2016, that's really bad.
I always thought that Poland would have at least two. You know, I always thought that. I mean, I read last year, of course, it was probably a false alarm, but someone was saying there's a baby boom in Poland.
That's lower than Romania, which is 1.58, because I'm just looking these up as we go. Yeah.
Yeah. So the point I'm making is this is the trap that you get into when you're in the EU. So Ukraine is probably the worst. I mean, what's going on in the Ukraine right now in terms of emigration, you know, the sheer brain drain, I think there's like
as a comparison, the white birth rate in the United States is 1.82 per woman. Mm. So it's higher than both Poland and Romania.
Right. And so what's going on in the Ukraine, especially the Ukraine had a population, I believe, of 60 million in 1990. Today it's 45 million. And a lot of that is due to emigration out of the country to other, because all the, for example, Poland, Germany, all these countries in the EU are giving basically a blank check on visas to Ukrainians to move out of Ukraine. Mm. So, you know, the people that are leaving tend to be doctors, engineers, so they have a huge brain drain. I mean, this is essentially just a large scale Katyn forest for a country.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, those people might come back or they might not. And so this is what I'm saying. Like, this is the 1-2 punch. So the EU, they encourage your citizens to leave for Britain, for Germany, for so on. And at the same time, they go out there and they say, wait a second, we don't have workers. All our young people are gone. Hmm. What do we do, big thing? Huh? What do we do? And, you know, because of the idiosyncrasies of Eastern Europe, people will push back on something like Pakistani immigration. I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be
Romanians
that are going to fucking fight this. But they start to prod. That's the problem. You start to see these things being recommended more and more and more and more. And as the country, you know, becomes distracted and becomes Americanized and becomes Judaized through the European Union, people start to become more and more apathetic until you get to a point, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, 5 years from now. They're like, hey, our economy is going to collapse if we don't bring in a million Pakistanis or stuff like that. I mean, that's the argument they're making here. I mean, I don't know if you know anything about Romania, but it's an extremely poor country.
Yes, okay. Very, very poor, yeah.
You know, I'll even go as far as to say that anyone that says that it's significantly better than it was under communism, go talk to actual Romanians that lived under both systems.
Well, and they'll tell you that they're having they're having a problem. I mean, it's happening all over Eastern Europe, but Romania is one of the most hardest hit, where one, emigration, and the rural land is almost unoccupied. And if you go, it's just old people and no children. It's right. Really sad. I mean, I've seen even movies about this where it's just there in out in the rural parts of Eastern Europe, a lot of these old couples and their children have gone away. And there's no one even to work to provide them food. And it's really weird, dude. It's really eerie.
When these communist countries started to loosen their emigration laws in the 80s, conservatives always used to use the fact that they had, you know, a significant amount of emigration as proof that the system, the socialist system in Romania and so on failed, right? Fair enough. But then what do you have to say about the fact that like 10 times as many people are emigrating now from these countries?
Don't tell you that.
30 years into the capitalist experiment, into privatization and liberalism, 30 years into that, you have what, 8-9 million Poles living outside of Poland? in Britain, in Germany. I mean, I don't know what the exact number is, but it's massive. And then at the same time, you're saying you don't have workers. Something doesn't add up. And furthermore, and this is actually a point. Something
doesn't add up. I mean, it does. I don't know what – I don't have an answer here, but you're right. It doesn't – I don't think those countries are actually significantly better off. Certainly, if you look at Russia, the billionaires, there's a lot more of those. But, like, okay, those are all – a lot of them are former state officials too. But
yeah.
But yeah,
they're also like Jews. They're actually not former state officials. They're actually black market figures, like literal, like people that engage in organized crime in the Soviet times, largely Jewish. And those people were the only ones that had like the amount of money to buy these state enterprises when the collapse happened. So now you have these countries are all plutocracies. They're all fucking really corrupt. And on top of that, you have low birth rates, high immigration, and now you're starting to hear talk of bringing in immigrants to countries that have never had such a thing.
Well, the other thing is these countries have much internal investment. Like, are they being fooled, or not fooled, but pressured by this IMF austerity bullshit into not investing in themselves to keep workers around and start building a new economy?
You know, I'm not entirely sure, but I do think the IMF has, first of all, the main source of credit to these countries comes from Brussels and the various Western European banks. That's the first thing. They get a lot of cheap credit from them. That's true. And that's really
and that's what controls their economy. Because then what happens is they will get loan ratings based on how their economy is structured. And if they go too far in the direction of say, socialism or a mixed economy even, because I personally think a mixed economy is best, the sort of social democratic type thing. If they go too far in the direction, then their credit rating gets tanked, and then the government loses all its money.
And not just that, but if their labor market is too tight and their wages are too high, all those companies that are being outsourced from Britain, from Germany, and from France to Eastern Europe will stop going there.
Yeah, no, it's a really bad situation that they're caught in, and it's because they basically didn't ease their way out of socialism; they just ended it, and there was no the way they ended it was badly done because there was an ideology that it's capitalism. You gotta have capital. But they forget, like, all these Western countries developed a natural economy alongside of this capitalistic ideology. So people, you often hear hardcore capitalists be like, well, the United States isn't, look at all the socialist stuff we did. Look at, look at this, look at that, look at the highways, look at the Tennessee Valley Project, look at all these things. And it's like, yeah, they're not wrong. So this economy developed naturally, where these economies are like experiments and they're all failing.
I disagree. I think that these countries are two things. One, the Slavic countries are just from a cultural perspective, but also even from an economic one, their economies are structured to serve a Russian market or stuff like that. Like, what can the Ukraine really produce? Like, in terms, I mean, does Ukraine have fine wines and cheeses and stuff like that that the bougie people in the EU want? I don't know. So that's one issue. Two, I wouldn't make any more excuses for market liberalism. I mean, it's been 30 years, okay? I mean, the communist Romanians, despite how shitty they were, they took this bombed out country, this destroyed agrarian bombed out country, and they turned it into an industrialized nation in 30 years. So, like, something's going on here. I think it's just simply the fact that the EU sees, first of all, it's that liberal economics are a bunch of bullshit. I don't think they work. I think it's capitalism that works on paper and fails in practice, because if your birth rate is plummeting, if your people are fleeing the country, and if you have enormous rates of alcoholism and drug abuse and so on, that's a failed system, okay?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I don't care what stupid consumer good or gadget you have access to that you didn't have before. That is a failed system.
Were you under the impression that I was making an excuse for market liberalism?
No, no, but...
Because I wasn't. That's literally the opposite of what I said.
What I'm saying is that, you know what, I don't care if people want to call me a communist. You know, looking at these things in retrospect, you know, Ceausescu doesn't look so bad at this point, you know, because Ceausescu wouldn't bring 500,000 Pakis into your country, okay? And I'm sure, like, some very, you know, ideological anti-communist would be like, oh, but he did this or that. It's irrelevant. You will be replaced by this current system, racially replaced. Your culture will be destroyed. That is the reality of the European Union. I mean, you know, look at another example. Look at Ireland. I mean, Ireland has a lot of problems like this, too. So does Greece, actually. So, you know, Greece and Ireland – I mean, it's kind of a joke and a meme, but Greece and Ireland have the lowest IQs in Europe, right, as nations. I think Ireland is like 92 and Greece is like 93. And yeah, you could make a million different, you know, deterministic theories for that. But my theory, I mean, there's a Greek guy that's a high up figure in NASA in America. OK, he's born in Greece and he works for NASA and he's like a brilliant scientist. Ditto for Irishmen. So what I'm saying here is that the reason these countries have such low IQs is because of the massive emigration,
mm-hmm.
brain drain. There's massive emigration to other countries, and this deprives these nations from important creative minds, people that are that have initiative and so on. Not to take away from the people that still live there. But what I'm saying is that, you know, you're cutting off the head of all these nations. And on top of that, you know, even intra-European immigration inside of the European Union, there's no real problem with that, you know, on a person-to-person level. But if you have like 5 million Ukrainians moving to Poland, it seems like a minor issue, but it does kind of break down borders a little bit, slowly but surely.
And a lot of the Polish have moved into Western Europe.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a big – like, in England, for example. And a lot of times you'll get these cowards in England that will never mention – they're the only kind of – they'll just talk about the Polish. They don't talk about any of the non-white immigration or who's
– oh, I hate that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like – it's like, come on now. But just – so Ireland has an average IQ of 95. Greece, 93, Poland, 96, Romania, 91. Oh my gosh, dude, you don't even want to see Albania. Albania is 82, Montenegro is 86. Oh God, Serbia is 90. Oh my God. How will I ever recover?
That's because you're here.
Yeah, right? That's because my ancestors all moved here, right? Yeah. But yeah, no, these are different. They're different IQ maps, but I've just been checking some of them. There's different ones for different places. Trends are all the same, right? It gets lower as you go east.
Right. So, of course, there's going to be some HBD spur.
And there's a jump. There's a jump when you hit Russia. Of course, Russia's high, but yeah.
Right. And so, but what I'll say is
they're white.
Well, I'll say this:
Western Russia.
I'll say this though, the issue here more than anything is how this serves as a steam valve, right? Like, you know, if this was the classic nation state, say 40 years ago or something or whatever, and you know, 10 million Poles were unemployed, that would be very destabilizing for the Polish government.
Right.
Okay. It would lead to probably, in the Polish context, a nationalist revolution. So this is actually a way to stave off revolution. That's why the elites in all these countries, they encourage their people to leave.
And then they bring in replacements.
Bringing in people from Bangladesh and Pakistan and so on to replace them. Who are,
so we can probably, to kind of bring this together, we can muse about capitalism, socialism, what kind of system would be best and what the problems are. But the fundamental problem is Polish people are leaving, Romanian people are leaving, and Muslims, Pakistanis are being brought in. Foreign, racially foreign people are being brought in. That's a problem. And that why are those two things happening at the same time? And what policy could be pursued that would prevent that from happening? And why aren't they doing that?
Why would you allow...
Why are they not even asking the question?
Why would you allow German and British and American companies to take your engineers and doctors away? Why would you fucking let that happen? Yeah. Why? That makes no sense from a nation state perspective. You don't even have to be a nationalist. Even if it was just about pure economic development and social development, why would you let that happen? You know, and I find that this is being engineered.
Well, of course it's being engineered. I mean, everything. This is the other thing. A lot of people need to get their minds, and I'm not talking to our audience necessarily, but this is a good thing that you can say to people when you talk to, because you will see occasionally, although I think we've been talking a conversation about how we're not really getting these free market Spurgs anymore, because and people have just gotten beyond that. Like that was an artifact of the early 2000s, but that's another thing. If you happen to run into them, just tell them everything's engineered. There's no such thing as an economy of an invisible hand.
No.
There's no such thing as an economy without the touch of planning, without the touch of people behind it, making what's happening, without somebody turning the wheels, without somebody, you know, grinding the gears, making it happen, deciding what's going to happen and making it happen. That happens. That happens in the West, and it happens in the East. The East, it's just they have this fucking, they've set this thing up for you where they're like, oh, look, the West is so rich because we never had communism. And it's like, okay, I mean, maybe on some level true, but
the East, but the East was actually a lot poorer than the West before communism as well.
Yes. No, so that's true. Right.
That I mean, the only thing, the Soviets were shitty from a cultural and national perspective, but economically speaking, the closest Eastern Europe has ever gotten to competing with Germanic countries is under the Soviet Union, like it or not. That's just a historic fact. I mean, they were 200 years before they were 200 years before that behind America, and you know, then they close that gap down to 20 years behind. I mean, that's just a fact. But you know, that's not to excuse the barbarism of you know, the Jews that ran those things, especially before the 1950s, but. You know, that there is something to be said about that. Romania isn't enduring this situation because of some thing that happened 30 years ago.
The point is here, I think, that the idea of planning an economy as this anathema on this conservative free market right needs to go. They need to get that out of their mind. I think if you marry that idea with a defense of communism, then it's going to be tougher. But also, like, what you're saying is not necessarily we should defend communism, but we should think about this in a different way. Like,
in a historical way.
We should look at this in a way where we don't buy into this kosher sandwich dichotomy of capitalism versus communism, because we both understand the third way economics are best. And these countries are being devastated by, a system that is luring their people out of the country, or they're actually having the government assist them perhaps in leaving, like in Mexico, where they actually send them to America because they want remittances. And I'm sure that there's the Polish government on some level with their 5 million workers abroad in Western Europe. They want those remittances as well. But it's like, why is that your incentive? Right? Yeah. Why is that your incentive? The incentive
it's
not good. And then because you're like, oh, we don't have, then you get Jews coming in. Oh, you don't have you don't have enough Wakis in your country. Oh, we got some Pakistanis for you. You know, this is bullshit. And if that's liberalism, then, you know, so much the worse for liberalism.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's what I would argue as well. You know, the state plays a role in the engineering, but it's all done on the orders of capitalists and Jews.
I mean, the people that are centrally planning these economies are not the governments of the countries.
No.
Which is at least something that you could get behind, but it's international bodies of monetary funds and bankers.
or just domestic Jewish criminals, like was Igor Kolomisky. Yeah. That's like the guy who financed that new Jewish president that Ukraine has. Oh, he's like God. He's like his best friend he's or something.
Like a comedian. Like it's literally fucking clown world now. It's literally a fucking clown world.
It's Judd Apatow.
Oh my your new God. Ukrainian yeah, president. Imagine that. Louis C.K. President C.K.
And his main backer is this Jewish oligarch. So three of four billionaires in the Ukraine right now are Jewish. Three of the four. Yeah. I mean, that is remarkable. That's like a bigger portion of it than
that's crazy. Terrible. That is, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, in America, Jews don't like to be the guy in front. You know, they will be occasionally. You got your Chuck Schumers and people like that. But to be like the people, like the top of the chain politically, that's unusual. They've never been president.
They also don't want – you know what else Jews don't want? They don't want thoughtful people in the country that might figure out a way to lead their country to fight them.
Yeah.
That's another thing they don't want. That's another thing emigration kills. All those scientists and not really scientists, but, you know, just thoughtful people that were doing stuff in Ukraine.
Well, functional people they are leaving.
I mean, they're neutralized because they become Uber drivers.
Yes. So all these functional people leave. And then you're left with, you know, a remnant that has problems that aren't very smart or very productive, or maybe they're on drugs or they have broken homes. You know, they have psychological problems.
Or they're elderly. Or I think it's that.
A lot of them are old, too. That's what I was saying.
It's, like, it's really just that they're elderly and they're not going to fight any revolution against you. So you see it from that perspective, and it's the only way it makes sense.
Yeah.
Is that they just don't want these young people, young thoughtful people that will fight against them, and that's how you get a Jewish president. I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, certainly the only people you see. I mean, Kolomisky,
Kolomisky was financing Right Sector. Remember Right Sector?
Yes.
Those were the guys that people were calling Nazis and stuff. That guy, it was like literally his personal army, and I've seen conflicting stuff. I've seen mainstream media people assert this, and of course, Azov Battalion supporters will push back against it. But Igor Kolomisky is believed to be the financer of Azov Battalion, and the reasoning for it is, first of all, he's a cynic. He doesn't care what if they use a Totenkopf or a swastika in their logo or whatever. What I've seen as the explanation from the other side is that he's using them to protect his business interests in areas that the Russian rebels are trying to secede. So he uses the Azov Battalion to protect his investments.
I mean, do you know that for a fact, or that's just something you've heard?
I've heard that, but he was also, if I recall correctly, I'm open to correction. He was the governor of the province where the Azov Battalion was fighting.
Yeah.
On the periphery.
I just don't know about that, so I don't comment on it. But we can say for sure that Jewish oligarchs have an iron grip on the Ukraine. That's a for sure thing. And they are also trying to.
I don't see anyone seriously challenging them. I'm sorry.
No, I don't see it either. And on top of that, they also want a further alliance with the European Union and the West, which for those of us in the West, believe me, if you want to retain your racial and cultural integrity in the Ukraine, having Jewish oligarchs allying with the European Union and NATO is going to flood. Not only is it going to destroy your culture and leave your country open to looting, but it's going to destroy it because they're going to start flooding you with immigrants. They're going to start flooding you with PAWS. I mean, I think there's probably already enough PAWS in Ukraine media. You know, people think that there's not PAWS in the media of these countries. They're wrong. There is.
There's even PAWS. You know, again, what someone will say is, well, look, there's this sexually degenerate thing on Russian TV late at night. Yes, there is. We're not saying there isn't, but you know, Ukraine had its first gay pride parade in history just like 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
This Igor, and trust me,
imagine EU, that.
European Union, once they figure out some way to get the Russians to give them a compromise or something, they're going to join the European Union. I don't think that the groups that get celebrated by certain people they're playing the long game and so on. See it to believe it. I believe it, just like Donald Trump's executive orders. See it to believe it.
Yeah, this and guy, I don't want to get into like a big argument with those people. I think that
I don't bother. I'm not going to argue. I'm just telling you what I see as the facts.
No, I mean, I have to kind of agree with that. I would love it if you were right.
Yeah,
let's put it this way: I would love it if Nazis took over Ukraine. That'd be great, but I'm skeptical that it's going to happen.
I'm not trusting that plan.
Yeah,
I mean, this guy Igor. So the two founders, there's something called the European Jewish Union, and this is operated out of Brussels. Huh. And the two founders of it are Ihor Kolomoisky. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Whatever.
And another
whatever.
Another Ukrainian billionaire Jew, which is Vadim Rabinovich.
Mm-hmm.
These are the two founders of the European Jewish Union. So if those guys are ready putting their foot in the door over there, you're going to join the European Union, and you're going to be flooded with filth, and you're going to have mandatory gay.
You're
going
to have state enforced homosexuality,
and you're going to get all that. So, you know, I'm just saying, like.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not trusting your plan. And
basically, what
some of these people do when you don't agree with them on this or you bring these things up, their response is to call you a Jew.
I don't want to get involved in a diet.
I don't want to get involved. I'm just telling you what I see.
Yeah,
and if you see any different, I'm open to hearing it.
Maybe the long game is accelerationism. They're like, we got to make Ukraine clown world and people will rise up. I'm just joking.
That's a good point. You know,
I'm just joking.
Another way.
I don't think that's the plan.
I've heard people that support these groups like IDAR, Azov, these groups like that. I've heard them say shit like, "Oh no, we're going to use this juice." So I'm a soccer hooligan from the Ukraine. And I'm joining this battalion, and I'm manipulating. He's not manipulating me. I'm manipulating them, and ultimately I'm going to betray them. That's the I'm outsmarting these billionaire Jews. So I'm this guy. I'm a football hooligan, and I'm actually cleverly outsmarting them. I'm also publicly announcing that I'm doing this.
Yeah, that's like, remember when Bronx Blogger said that Antifa was using the corporations?
Oh, well, that's basically the same.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, Kolomoisky, you know, this guy offers, he's offering, he gave $500,000 to someone who captured or killed the leader of one of the separatist groups in a region he has business interests in. So, I don't know. You tell me. Actually, don't tell me. I don't even bother arguing this shit anymore with people because some people, I understand it. They have existential reasons for thinking these things. So, like, you can't convince them of anything. It's like Balkan shit, you know? You can't convince people to, you know, about this or that because they have these deep-seated national...
Well, I would also say this about the Balkan stuff is that that's all new shit. Like, those ethnic grievances between those groups were cooked up in the 20th century. By the great powers, like, there was no inherent reason for Yugoslavia to have been split into, like, this was, this was stuff that was happening around, and people, now, when you read history leading up to World War I, you will read more honest history, because it's less immediately necessary for it to be a lie. But they will grow, will only tell you these great powers were manipulating these tensions, which didn't need to be a thing. But they won't tell you that they were, you know, Bill Clinton and the United States, not really, you know, were doing the same thing in the 90s. that these people, why? Why is this? Why are these people having these civil wars? Why? And if they are having, why is the West pumping weapons in there?
And why?
Taking sides. Why are we doing that?
And not just taking sides, but actually actively inflaming the ethnic tensions.
Actively inflaming it by giving the worst elements. They give the worst elements. You. They give these grug brains a bunch of fucking weapons, and they go out and do terrorist shit, and then it's like, oh, look, a civil war. How'd that happen?
Yeah, yeah. And on top of that, like, the sheer you know, the oftentimes these are things like, you know, sometimes there are real grievances, but sometimes it's just you killed my prince in 1655.
Yeah, it's like, it's stupid shit. And like, dude, and I've said this to Balkan people, like, yeah. I've said this to other people from, and they're like, yeah, no, it's true. It's like, these people are all morons.
I think it is dying down a little bit. Yeah. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad one, like the animosity between Serbians and Croatians and stuff like that. I think that's actually
Serbians
dying down.
Serbians and Croatians are like, I mean, my DNA test can barely tell the difference between that.
The same people.
Yeah, it's the same, genetically the same. The issue there is I mean, the thing is, do Orthodox and Catholics really want to go murdering each other? I mean, that's not even a Christian thing to do. You know, so if they're trying to use that angle, it doesn't work. And then ethnic pride, it's like, look, trust us, you people are the same. Like, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's so stupid. And it's...
Well, I mean, those differences were meaningful, Catholic versus Orthodox. Those were meaningful, and they had geopolitical ramifications. It meant that one side would side with Russia, the other side...
that's essentially what it meant.
...with the allied powers. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, but... Ultimately, the point I'm making is that Eastern Europe is in trouble, and you know, these guys like Orban and the Polish government, where the prime minister is Jewish, by the way. So that's another thing. Like, there are so few Jews in these countries that like the few Jews that are there are like running everything. Like,
yeah.
Like in America, I don't think they could ever imagine having a Jewish president, because the invisible there's enough people, there's enough Jews to run the invisible government, the bureaucracy. But in Ukraine and in
they need
Poland,
to just have somebody right.
They
don't
literally
have enough.
Have Jews as president. They're the leaders of these countries, countries that, according to Jews themselves, are incredibly anti-Semitic. Yet they have these. I mean, that Jewish guy in Ukraine. One with like 75% of the vote.
I'd be curious about that result there. That's a little suspicious. And also, and it's also like what's the electorate like? I mean, look, we can go into all this. There's a lot of questions raised by all this stuff. But yes, I mean, and we do have these European elections coming up, and the nationalist bloc that is like this Polish, this Italy, Poland, Hungary axis that they're trying to create, which I'm supportive of it, but we have to support these kind of developments, but also, you know, keep an eye on it is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Keep an eye on it, be supportive. And, you know, of course, then even people like Sargon and stuff like that, like in the UK, these people are going to be in the European. I mean, I hope Sargon gets elected. I don't know what the exact numbers in his district are, but that would be great. And then he joins these nationalist bloc. That would be fantastic. But like, no, even in the UK,
internet troll.
I'll tell you this, that the anti-Brexit party is poised to make a lot of gains. And of course, that's Nigel Farage, which is like, okay, this guy again with the same shit, you know.
What's interesting about the Brexit party is it has many prominent left-wing support. George Galloway endorsed them, for example.
Yes.
And that's because a lot of people don't know this because they think in terms of left and right.
Well, everybody that listened to Tedious on Friday knows this.
Yeah, 60% of Labour Party voters, Labour Party electorate, voted for Leave. This is white working people in Britain. They voted for Leave. And that's not even that different from the Tories, which is, I believe, 70% of Tory voters voted for Leave. So this is a mandate that they have. And you have Jewish pressure groups that are actually trying to pressure Corbyn from the top to totally just brush off the will of 60% of his voters.
He doesn't want to do it. That's another reason for this anti-Semitism row stuff.
Exactly.
But of course, like, there's also the other reason is because there's a lot of Muslims that have come into the country, and they vote very left. And they become the constituency for guys like Corbyn and Galloway. They don't like Israel. So those guys, while low-key Galloway is probably an anti-Semite. I don't think Corbyn is. I think Galloway is. But I don't think Corbyn is.
Yeah.
But Corbyn has to pander to these non-whites. And so, I mean, Galloway loves doing it. He's happy to do it. He's legitimately.
He gets like 23-year-old fucking Syrian pussy and stuff. He's like
Dude, George Galloway is legitimately an example of like an anti-racist anti-Semite. Like, he's like legitimately, that's what he is. And the funny thing is, people talk about, like, Morgoth was telling us last week, he's telling us about how, like, George Galloway, they look up what he likes on Twitter, and it's like way edgier stuff than what he would say. But, like, yeah. He's old, so he doesn't realize that people can look at what what he's clicking like on. So they're like, he's clicking like on all this edgy anti-Jewish stuff, and they're like, hey, George, what's going on? But anyway, we should probably end it there, because
let's end it there.
Yeah, but this is a good show. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely listen for more stuff on the UK stuff. Listen to Tedious on Friday. We had a good chat with Morgoth.
Yeah, Morgoth is great.
He filled us in on a lot of this stuff. It was really funny.
Morgoth is really great because he's a really smart guy and thoughtful, but he's also very just a down to earth, like, kind of solid and direct guy. You know, I really miss people like that.
Yeah,
you don't meet people like that anymore. People that are just grounded and, you know, kind of they don't let emotions alone overwhelm them, and they also think deeply about things. You know, that's why I like Morgoth. You know?
Yeah, yeah, it was a great show. So, anyway, this is a good show too. So, thanks, Stryker, and thanks everyone, and we'll see you guys next week. See ya.
See ya.